Hey, baby, Joel Radio. What's going on?
Well, there's a new intro.
It's my new catchphrase. Hey, baby.
All right.
It's Joel Radio, baby. Come on.
All right. Simsalabim.
You know, Penn Jillette had a great bit where he talked about. He heard it from someone else, but this is how stories get shared, isn't it, in America nowadays?
Yeah.
How to do Dennis Miller.
Oh, right.
Do you know that there's a formula for Dennis Miller?
How's that, babe?
Well, that's part of it.
Yeah.
It's
gotta cock your head while you do
it. It's intellectual reference, followed by low popular culture reference, followed by a curse word.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's your, it's like Henry... He's like Henry David Thoreau at Walmart, you asshole. You know, that's it. That's it. It's intellectual reference. Low culture reference curse or babe. Babe is acceptable as the curse.
Babe. Well, that was the SNL version.
Yeah, because he couldn't curse.
It's so sad because I used to love Dennis Miller so much, and I thought he was
politics ruined him.
I thought he was great on SNL.
Yeah,
as the update guy, and then even when he had his own HBO show, which was like, you know, in the late 90s, mm-hmm. that was a good show.
Yeah,
Dennis Miller was great, and he was always a little political, you know what I mean? But it was generally a larger cultural thing. And
sure.
then he got real specific into the Fox deal, and I was watching a clip online of Sam Cedar and Andy Kindler, like apparently every week they would break down the Dennis Miller and Bill O'Reilly segment. And they were like real sad because they had the last ever one, and you can see Dennis Miller is like reading the thing off the and it's just these weird topics. They're like, apparently there were Coke bottles in China with Warren Buffett on it, and like O'Reilly's like, what's the deal? I mean, they're a communist country and they got Warren Buffett, and then you know Dennis Miller's like, I was in line at the Panda Express and I saw they had Jeff Bezos wrestling a dragon while I'm trying to buy my Beijing beef bowl.
he's
got a real cadence to it. You know what I mean? It was just sad watching this once really funny guy just lost in the world.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Because
he just really has gone into that old man audience where it's like, you know. But he did do a night, I think he's doing it all month, of hosting on TCM.
Okay.
And he was showing like King Kong and Mothra. And like a bunch of monster movies. And it was nice because there was no, you know what I mean? He didn't go, and let me tell you about Hillary's email spam. You know, it was none of that. It was just him going, Mothra's about this crazy cuckoo moth and these wacky little tiny chicks. And you can't, and now I'm doing Paul Schaefer, but I used to do a good Dennis Miller, whatever. It's sad to see.
He's like Salvador Dali made a Three Stooges movie, baby.
Right. Yeah, it's exactly right.
You know,
right.
There's the formula. Try it. Try it out, Corey.
You do the formula. That's right.
Do the formula. You know. Intellectual reference.
That's right.
Pop culture.
Mothra's like Jackson Pollock bakakied all over a dinosaur. Anyway.
We got a lot to get into today because let's see. Well, I guess, do you want to talk about TV right off the rip here? Because there's a lot of news coming out of TV this week. I don't know why. I guess it's the end of the season, right? So people
it's
are
the
finding
end of the
out.
Season,
are we getting renewed? And if you have a television show, you're basically not getting renewed. I think, is that what we learned this
it
week?
It seems like
is
there's that, been a just the a of spate of cancellations.
And thank God for a few of them. I mean, right?
Yeah. Oh, my. They're...
Two Broke Girls is gone from CBS, the show that I'm sure I spent many hours on this channel, on this show, Joel Radio, going, this is the worst show on television. And it's funny, this many years later, I think they did six seasons.
Yeah.
You almost don't even care because the rest of television has kind of fallen to that level anyway.
Well,
with the exception of like streaming stuff and sort of HBO. And there are people that, you know, television is a thing where you can see the really highest art on display, the highest level of creativity and production value, and you can see absolute complete shit at the same time. Simultaneously living side by side.
Yeah, this is
somewhat harmoniously.
You watch a show like Better Call Saul, and they had an episode last week that was like the best episode of that show which is already operating at like the highest level. Like,
yeah,
that I would say that's the best show on TV. Mm-hmm. But there's, you know, a half dozen other candidates across all the other streaming sure. services and stuff. You could argue there's just stellar. Right. They say it's the platinum age of television. There's more
yeah.
great shows being done now mm-hmm. than there ever have.
I'm going to give you one later.
You've got Fresh Off the Boat. You know what yeah, I mean? Or,
right, yes.
or Dr. Ken. Did Dr. Ken
Dr.
get
Dr. Ken's gone. Now, Dr. Ken is officially right. canceled. Right. I know you probably have the whole list. I only
well,
have
I'm
a couple
looking
highlights.
For a good, you know, the problem with all these lists is I want one that's readable.
Yeah,
know?
it's succinct, and there's a lot of those shows that you and I never watched and don't even know what they are.
Yeah, Fresh Off the Boat was renewed, Dr. Ken canceled. So,
okay, so
win one for Asian stereotyping, yeah, take one back.
Take one away. Yeah.
No, it looks like they purged a lot of sitcoms. It looks like a lot of three-camera
well,
sitcoms.
Well, look, those are expensive to make.
Got the Ziggy.
And when yeah. you have a big talent budget and, right. you know, big-time producers making them, that there's probably very little profit there for
well
for them. And, you know,
there is, I think with Two Broke Girls, they said, we've hit syndication.
Yeah.
Good night.
Yeah.
Although,
well, that's
Big
the point.
Bang Theory, they're going to milk
no.
that until all of them have children, all of those children have their menstrual cycle,
yeah.
and then, you know, they're just going to keep doing that thing forever. Then they're going to be like, we're going to do a prequel with Sheldon before he met everybody,
yeah.
and Jim Parsons is, what, 39 years, 42 years old, and he's going to play a 21, you know what I mean? Like, he's going to be 17? Well, how are we going to do that?
A different actor, maybe?
Are they going to recast Sheldon?
Well, they'll do like How I Met Your Mother, and he'll voice over the old, he's
oh,
the
okay.
old, and
old
they'll get
Sheldon
some kid, and old Sheldon oh will, I don't know.
But there were victories for good taste. Two Broke Girls, which is an atrocity, it really is the shittiest show.
It is a dumpster fire of comedy. It is the worst.
I
yes.
mean, look, and we have a mutual friend, or frenemy is more appropriate,
huh.
that is, you might know him as Professor Hobo. Who walks around the streets doing trivia and drinking in various local
mm-hmm.
old man bars. And Robert.
What anyway, is, I know, but
yeah,
I know who you're talking
he's
about.
A big,
but
he was sad that they canceled Two
Broke Girls. Because he probably beats off. Because
he beats off to Kat Denning. And
Kat
I just Denny's wanted to be
sticks, yeah.
like, look, there is pornography available at
yeah,
all times.
Yeah, well,
like day or night.
I look.
Maybe he didn't have Wi-Fi. I don't know what it is.
I
but that show served only the purpose of Kat Dennings' boobs.
Look, I'm not going to make fun. Well, first of all, that guy's an idiot. But I'm not going to make fun of him for, you know, last show I told you how I was watching Great News with Briga Helin because
yes,
she's hot.
Yes, that's true.
So I can't fault him
well, look,
for that. But
I liked Kat Dennings before Two
yeah,
Broke Girls.
Right.
And then she started doing Two yeah. Broke Girls, and it really, like much like Dennis Miller, the love flowed out of my body.
Yeah, it's
like
it was a terrible television show.
Because, you know, that show hit you, like, in a lot of different horrible ways.
Because
mm-hmm. it was, like, the girls were all doing slut. It was all slut jokes.
Yeah.
It, like, much like the Two and a Half Men.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had the obnoxious Asian stereotype guy.
Oh, yeah.
Then you had the fucking short order cook Slavic guy that would ring the bell with
right.
the dumb joke. Ding!
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just, and it's just an assault on everything.
It was, and the thing about it is they sort of like, kind of, I guess at the time that came out, I'm not sure if like girls on HBO predated it, but there was this thing about like independent women, and there was sort of this
yes.
women in comedy were taking over, and that show was going
and
to be like, you know,
that show managed
Bridesmaids
to be
and stuff, and that show was the worst,
right.
you know. It was completely regressive. It was not
right.
progressive.
It was the show
was,
about
yeah,
two
was
liberated young girls making it in the big city that happened to be the most sexist, homophobic, xenophobic,
the worst,
just anything they could do.
Yeah.
They had Garrett Morris. I'm glad he got a job. But
yeah, good for him. And really, you know, and again, you don't want to even blame, you know, that is groupthink at its worst. It is the lowest common denominator comedy. And even though if you pull the individuals out of that, you might have a lot of talent.
Yeah,
but
Jennifer
you stick
Coolidge,
them all together and it's garbage.
Jennifer Coolidge is always funny and whatever, but it was horrible.
And everyone's because everyone's making money and no one's yeah. there to really rock the boat and try to make it.
What
good.
About Last Man Standing with
well,
Tim Allen?
You know, a lot of, I know we were talking about this before, but you know, people are sort of going, well, the conservatives are dead and look, there's a backlash and that's why Tim Allen's off the air. And it's like it's on Friday night at 9:00. The audience is between 70 and dead for that show.
Yes.
I mean, who cares? It's been on enough. You know, they did their time. They can put on a Friday night ABC sitcom and make it for, you know, whatever Tim Allen's getting paid per episode, they could make a whole show for that. that'll get every bit as good of ratings. So who cares? You know.
Well, and that's the other thing about the demographics. And you know, now Tim Allen, I'm sure the right wing guys are all complaining that how come we can't get this? You know, Tim Allen was punished for being a conservative in Hollywood, and they didn't want his message being out. And if you ever watched that show, which I forced myself to. It's Tim Allen going, it's like he's got millennial daughters.
Yeah.
He's like, you dumb kids and your computers. It's like his stage act where, you know, he's literally doing the, I was the remote control. I mean, which we've seen a bunch of dumb comics do.
It's a lot of hack premises.
Where it's like, you know, you don't even understand putting tinfoil on the antenna to change the channels. And, you know, you've never killed and eaten a steak live. You've never killed a deer and eaten it with your bare teeth.
It's a grumpy old man doing a show for grumpy old men. That's kind of that show. So, so that's gone. But I mean, here's the thing about television, and I know this is reading about ESPN and their big. They fired a bunch of Ed Werder's out of a job, Corey,
which
believe
sucks.
It or not. But they fired a bunch of people. Apparently, television, cable, and broadcast television. Is down about 30% across the board. And that's going to kill your budget for a lot of these things. And, you know, in the case of ESPN, you know, ESPN might, you know, it's they get approximately $7 per subscriber, $7 and some change.
Yeah.
So that's like, you know, a Netflix subscription. And when you lose a third of, you know, 100 million subscribers...
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just lost $200 million in annual revenue. It's crazy. You got to cut back. So everything that's broadcast and cable is down. Everything's hurting. You know, if you're not doing streaming on some level, and, you know, CBS is, and, you know, Fox and NBC and are doing it through Hulu. ESPN is on some of those, you know, streaming cable alternatives now.
Yeah.
I forget which ones, if it's Sling and ESPN PlayStation View and some of those they're on.
ESPN will endure.
Yeah.
But they're in a position right now where all the people that don't want ESPN are in the process of shedding it.
Yeah.
And so they had an artificially actually ESPN is to fucking blame for your cable bills skyrocketing.
Exactly. But the problem is too that they've got I've heard it's $1 billion a year that they have to pay to the leagues for a broadcast. So that's, you know, I don't even know exactly who they have now. Do they have
NBA, which is probably
NBA
chunk of their
and NFL, and they're probably the two big ones. And I guess do they have ESPN? They have baseball. They have baseball, right?
Yeah, they have Sunday Night Baseball.
MLB. So
they have everything.
They don't have NHL anymore.
They don't have hockey, but they
and they don't have UFC is on Fox and stuff. So they've
got MLS, which not as expensive as the other ones, but still.
It's $1 billion a year totality that they got to pay to have these games.
Right.
And it's like, how are they going to be able to? Now, here's the thing: if they can't afford that when these contracts come up, then the leagues have to take less money for their programming, which means our team's in trouble. Our league's going to have to, you know, are they going to get rid of franchise? I mean, there is a wave of things
NFL,
a domino effect.
The NFL has proven they are, of course, avaricious, money-grubbing whores of the great. They are just, Roger Goodell is just a big money dumpster.
Well, Amazon just picked up games.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Amazon's doing Thursday night now. I mean, they're not getting it exclusive, but they're getting it. So you will have access to those games streaming.
We're going through this weird process where they're all trying to figure out how to, you know, there's an audience.
Yeah.
There's people like TV's going away. No, it's not that TV's going away. It's just the audience is fractured in a way it's never been before. So they're all scrambling to figure out how to do this. Look at the NFL, though. Look at how many teams they're moving around.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely zero people in Los Angeles wanted the Chargers. Absolutely zero. Okay,
well,
now L.A. managed to go 20 years without an NFL franchise, being the second largest market in the country.
Mm-hmm.
The Rams were originally from L.A. and had a 60-year history in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
There are Rams fans there, I can confirm.
And they're back.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the Rams, but everything in L.A. is Lakers, first and foremost, and then the other teams.
Clippers and Kings later.
Yeah.
USC and UCLA are big.
Angels are way down. You know. Yeah. But there are some Rams fans. There was precedent for the Rams to come back to L.A. If the Raiders had come back.
Well, that was the option.
The Cholos would have flipped their nuts.
Yeah,
they
that was the option.
You would have seen a parade of lowriders bouncing up
brothers
and down.
Brothers would be yeah. celebrating, too.
All over El Barrio.
It's not put down.
No, but there is a very.
Put down South Central here.
There is a big Latino fan base.
Absolutely,
for the Raiders.
Yeah.
Los Raiders. I don't know why that is, but yeah, you're right. You would have had the Barrio and Long Beach would have celebrated the Raiders' return to Los Angeles. But instead, they brought the Chargers, who no one gave a damn about. And then they're going to move the Raiders to Vegas, which I find to be an atrocity. But
well, you know, Vegas is where the money is. You
I don't
know?
Like Vegas. I don't really
money
like.
Money is flowing to Vegas.
I don't really like Vegas, so I'm okay with nothing going to Vegas, but.
How hot are those games going to be in August and September?
It's stupid.
They better. Well, I don't know if they're doing. They don't have a stadium plan yet. I don't.
They're
going
to have a retractable roof.
They may have to do an indoor stadium like Arizona or a retractable roof or something. But anyway, yeah, football. That's in trouble too. I guess this is television that's, I think, in trouble, even if they don't know it yet. But let's talk a little daytime TV.
Oh my. But don't worry, Joel. America's Funniest Home Videos officially renewed.
Oh.
For their 29th season.
Who's the host of that now?
It is Alfonso Ribeiro.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
Like, here's the one thing. They cut the Tim Allen show.
Yeah.
They cut the... Bill O'Reilly was no longer, you know, worthwhile for the advertisers because he's too old. But old people will still watch guys get kicked in the nuts.
Well, somebody's watching that.
Right?
Kids are watching it, somebody.
Right?
But, yeah.
Hey, this kid's got a wiffle ball bat. What's going to happen to this guy's testicles? That's still compelling to people, even though YouTube, you can see all of the same, you know, bridesmaids' dresses catching on fire on YouTube right now.
Well, I don't even know. Well, I guess that one they do, but they don't do like skateboarder breaks arm like Tosh does or like, what's his name does, the guy on MTV. What's his name? Rob Dyrdek.
Yeah, it's people falling down but not getting grievously injured.
Well, they show that on those shows. They show it on
those. Are the same. That's the same premise.
Yeah.
But I, of course, hate Tosh, so that's fine.
Well, I watch. I'll admit to watching Dyrdek show. Whatever. What's the name of that show? Why can't I remember? The name of it?
You know, I vaguely know what you're talking about.
But anyway, in daytime TV, Ryan Seacrest has joined Kelly Ripa for that. That piece of shit, which is completely appropriate. He is the perfect guy for that show.
Oh.
Although, here's the power play. Yeah. Seacrest was on NBC, okay? And since they've canceled American Idol, now ABC is picking up American Idol, and Ryan Seacrest is going back to American Idol on ABC like anyone gives a fuck. Because it's funny to me when I hear American Idol is getting Seacrest back, so I'm like, I don't know that anyone watched American Idol for Seacrest. Now, granted, if it's
nobody
a thing,
watches anything for Seacrest.
It's a thing if you can get the authentic guy, I guess you should. But you or I could do as good. You know, anyone can do that job.
Right.
And, you know, no one's watching that show for the judges. No one's watching that really for
the
host.
Did anyone ever watch American Bandstand for Dick Clark?
No, but it made it, made it real to have him there, though, I guess.
Seacrest is both the spiritual and real successor to Dick Clark.
Kind of, sure.
In that he works music shows.
And he's a bland MC.
He produces all the stuff. You know, Dick Clark had, like, a cut of all those artists.
Mm-hmm.
The Ink Spots and all that shit. He would, like, steal money from all these up-and-coming doo-wop artists and stuff. And that's how he made his empire into Dick Clark Productions. But,
I thought Dick Clark owned long distance lines in Mexico or something. I've always heard
that.
Well,
these guys
are
smart.
Like California real estate and like crazy like rights to pipelines and things.
I have never been smart enough to buy anything.
No.
I've had like stocks occasionally and generally flipped them and got, you know, didn't buy more.
Well, listen, you and I, after the show, we're going to look into buying some Malibu real estate.
Okay.
So.
Well, that's okay. Like Bing Crosby and Bob Hope bought all of Los Angeles.
Well, didn't guys buy like the Valley
and made
money doing that?
Like
and
Bob Hope.
They bought Orange Groves and turned them into.
But before they developed
residential.
Like, you know, Bob Hope bought Malibu before anybody lived there. Yeah. And like, it, you know, that's where his all his.
There's a house
he
like.
Had massive
there's work. A house made out of like stones. In I think it's in Malibu. That Dick Clark owns, and it's, like, crazy, and it was, like, he built it in the 50s.
Okay.
Like, it's all made out of rocks. You can look it up. It's insane. Anyway.
How have I never had ever once this premise of going, here's somebody with talent, Where's my dollar out of that?
Yeah, well, you and I don't do that.
But those are the people that get, you know, Brad Gray just died, the famous
agent
perverser, right? And Gary Shandling had a big feud with him. And there's a guy that, you know, built his entire life going, how do I take a nickel out of the pocket of somebody famous and talented?
I know. Well,
I've never once had that notion. I was stupid and went, I'll be the guy that creates things.
Here's a guy. I had an actual conversation with a guy in comedy, and he pulled me aside and he goes, Joel, you know what you'd be good at? You should be managing comedians. A guy told me this. He says, you know the business. You're a smart guy. You'd be a very good manager of comedians.
Mm-hmm.
Now, without telling you who it is, I'm going to do my impression of this guy telling me this. Yo, dog, you know what, man? You should be a manager. That's what you should be doing, yo, dog.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, I mean, you know, and I go, okay. And
that gentleman should be a used car salesman.
Well, he is. But, you know, it was, you know, and I go, you know, you're not wrong. But I said, that part of the business is what I am bad at in my own career.
Right.
I hate doing that for me, who I give a fuck and am passionate about. You, I kind of don't give a fuck about your career. So how am I going to sell you if I can't sell me? It's not my thing.
As I have said for years, even before I was the old, crusty, seasoned, battered comedy professional that I am now, I said, you know, 12 years ago, comedy is the only business in which abject failures control your destiny.
Yeah, kind of.
Now, you have the rare guy that's like Ridley that's a good operator.
Yeah.
But even Mark did comedy early on.
Yeah, Mark did comedy. Mark,
I don't think Mark ever saw himself as a comic, but there's the rare example of
Mark
guy
was
that, like,
kind
of
an impresario before he was a comic,
right.
But he still works both.
I just use him as the exception.
Yeah, I know.
I use him as the one guy that kind of always loved the business and wanted to do it. Everybody else who runs a comedy club either failed as a comic or ended up accidentally running a comedy club.
Yeah.
How many managers of comedy clubs have you ever seen? Nobody's ever grown up and went, I would like to manage or book a comedy room.
Well,
not one soul has ever
Ridley's
done that.
The guy that...
Mark did.
Mark Ridley, who employs me at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle,
yes.
Is a guy that he wasn't the money mark, which is what most of the clubs are. Mm-hmm. The clubs are owned by a guy that you call the money mark.
It's the guy who puts
up the money.
Right.
And then the guy that runs it should be the guy that is passionate and understands comedy. Well, but what you end up with is guys quitting, and then the money mark has to hire the bartender who doesn't know comedy, you end up with the shithead running it.
Well, Mark did eventually.
They go out of business.
He had investors that he eventually bought out.
Yeah.
So...
I guess Mark did have those guys back in the day, Bob Seger and some guys. Believe me, all those old guys in their 60s and 70s stroll into the club, mm-hmm. and they talk to me on the weekend about how they had a piece of the castle in 1983, and I'm supposed to kiss their ass. And, you know, some of them we do, but, you know, I don't really know who they are, but they like to go around waving their dicks and saying
guess,
that they put
money
into the
there's
place.
There's probably a few other out, like Bud Friedman, I guess, is has always really...
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure there's plenty of guys that will tell you how Bud Friedman screwed him over. But
that's
a guy who always wanted to do it.
Yeah, I think Bud was a Broadway guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he had the improv and they had singers, but then he became a comedy guy. Well, you know, the famous, if you know a club owner by name, they're probably someone who cared.
Yeah.
Everybody else running Penguins in Iowa or wherever the hell that place is, you know, it's like they stumbled into it.
So
I feel that way about managers. I feel like guys go... Yeah. I want to be adjacent to show business.
Yeah. Well, we hired a guy when we got on radio for a weekend.
Another failure.
Well, but that guy is good at that selling element. You know, he's good at...
Yes, not good at the performance element.
But when
of
he
it.
Tries to sell himself, it's terrible because he's not talented.
Because he's awful.
Well, he's got talents that... Anyway.
You're being so diplomatic.
I'm too diplomatic.
Why? Because you're afraid the lawsuit will be flying in?
All right, let's talk about failures again.
Yeah,
let's
talk about just talking about a failure.
Well, here's a failure. Here's a successful person who's failing, which is always fun for us. Amy Schumer's new film came out.
Boy, that tanked.
It's called Snatched. Well, I have the box office for that.
Let me pull up the Rotten Tomatoes.
No, I have it right here. I have all of that. Save your breath. Snatched pulled up. By the way, I want you to review Guardians of the Galaxy. Let's not forget
I'll do that.
I didn't write it on the thing, but I'll write it now. It made $17.5 million in its opening weekend. On a $42 million budget, which basically means it's going to end up making less than its budget. Now, the Rotten Tomatoes on Snatched. 36% critic, 34% audience, with a Metascore of 46, which is mostly mixed reviews.
That's a pretty impressive agreement between the...
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I mean, there are some... if it's a movie like Guardians of the Galaxy, they'll match.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times, the critics will be much harder on these comedies than the audience.
No, Snatched has failed, and, you know, Amy Schumer is really in trouble, I think. It's funny. I don't know... You know, her, by the way, I looked up what the Amy Schumer Netflix special, the Leather special, which just came out a month or two ago, that is at, and there's not enough critical reviews for, and I found this with Netflix, because I was looking up something else on Netflix we'll talk about later, but it is, the Netflix reviews, there's not enough to have a critics composite, a 7% audience on Rotten Tomatoes for the Amy Schumer Netflix special. Also, the reason that Netflix has gotten rid of their 5 stars review is because everyone dumped on the Amy Schumer special. So, Corey, your thoughts?
The critics are savage. So it's an exhausted dead end to the format Schumer and Lena Dunham pioneered in the last
decade. But is Schumer just overexposed, or was she never that good anyway? Was it Judd Apatow who helped make... Trainwreck the success that it was?
I think that...
Was it lightning in a bottle? Women just burn out, or women get successful, and then there's a backlash, which happens with female recording artists, where they have one good album, and then everyone hates them? Tell me! Explain it to us now, Corey!
Well, I don't know.
Women be tripping. Explain.
Okay, I did work with Amy Schumer. Let me remind everybody of that.
Before she was famous.
Right before
she broke.
She was moderately. She was.
Did she have the sketch show, or that had just come
out? That was coming out.
It was coming out.
This was.
She had done Last Comic Standing.
So this would have been 2013.
Okay. Yeah. Right at the precipice.
And the sketch show was coming out.
Yeah.
She was hot off the roast.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Okay.
So we did great. We sold out 2 shows at a theater.
Yeah.
And she made a lot of money that night. Yeah. And she was, you know, actually, she was really icy to me before she saw me perform. Then she saw that I did well and was nice to me for the second show.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's
nice. You know what I mean? Between shows, she was real.
That is
nice.
Good, yeah.
And I personally liked her, and she was cool, and she was showing me, like, she was in a movie, and she was showing me clips, and she was excited about her career.
Yeah.
And good for her, and she was great that night.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, she fell into the trap where she had that first hour.
Yeah.
That she'd been working on the road for years.
Yeah.
And then she does this new special, and it's like, it's the classic thing.
Yeah.
It's like where somebody, you know, she called it the Leather special because she said, like, there's always that second or third special where the comic gets too big for their britches and they come out in a leather outfit and they look stupid. Well, then she proceeded to do
exactly that. She's making fun of it and yet did that exact fucking thing.
And it was profoundly unfunny. It was really like...
I didn't see the special. You're saying you did, right? But I saw Amy...
I didn't finish it, but...
I saw Amy when she was at her peak, right? I think it was the summer... I guess it was the summer that Trainwreck came out because she did the Oddball Festival. Aziz Ansari closed it, but she was on that bill, and I went, and, you know, she did 20 minutes, and it was fine. Everyone seemed happy with it. In fact, many people left after her performance because they were there just to see her.
Yeah.
And it was at DTE, so you're talking 9,000 people there, sold out, and, you know, people liked it, and I thought it was fine, but, she was white hot, and now it's over, and everything else. I mean, granted, when you dig out Goldie Hawn... You know, Goldie Hawn hadn't been in a movie in 15 years before this Snatched. And I guess she thought that was going to be some sort of symbiosis there with her career and Amy.
I don't want to blame Goldie Hawn.
No, you can't, because Goldie Hawn clearly has no career at this point.
I don't take any... Look.
A 70-year-old Goldie Hawn.
If you go on YouTube, there are dozens of right-wing guys that are going to be celebrating the downfall of Amy Schumer.
Yeah.
Because they all feel like she's this aggressive feminist asshole and she got what was coming to her.
Yeah.
And you'll see that. There's a lot of right-wingers cheerleading her downfall.
Yeah.
And then there's a certain amount of comedy snobs that maybe aren't quite politically as, you know what I mean, that are down, that are cheering her downfall.
Yeah.
I'm not cheering Amy Schumer's
downfall.
I'm
not either. I agree with you.
I enjoyed her. Like I said, I thought she was really good when I worked with her.
Yeah, and I enjoyed
at that
her
time
when
she was performing, you know, when she was coming up, I thought she was good. I think she's gotten a little. This happens though with a lot of people, and it's just the sad part is it when it's a woman, we have to just suddenly make it all about her box and what comes out of it.
But it's funny, people are going on about you know, they body shame her Instagram bikini pictures and stuff, and I'm kind of like, whoa, what the fuck, man?
Right.
Like, she's a regular looking
Look,
girl.
Now, obviously, that body would work for either of us.
Absolutely. And it would work right now. Believe me, Amy Schumer, I would throw one to her right fucking now on top of our mixing
which,
board.
Which, by the way, is
on
no,
the show.
Which is, by the way, no accomplishment.
Absolutely not. But yeah, I mean, Amy Schumer.
To clear the bar for our sexual desirability. Is not, you're not exactly Carl Lewis.
No, but Amy Schumer is funny on top of being attractive to us, and I think to most guys in a regular setting. If you ran into Amy Schumer at the bar and you didn't know who she was, I think you'd be attracted to her if you're a regular guy and not some asshole on Twitter. I think you'd go, hey, here's a good looking blonde. Here's a big blonde with nice tits, and yeah, she's funny, and let's fuck. That's what I think you'd think. And then you throw it in that she's funny. I think Amy Schumer's a great catch. But I don't know, you know,
now,
I mean,
was,
to women, and I find mostly probably women are hating on her attractiveness and, hey, why are you in a bikini, you fat pig? And you and I aren't doing that. You and I are like, hey, baby, let's roll. Let's go. Let's do it.
You and I are probably the most in favor of Amy Schumer in a bikini.
Absolutely.
We're all for that.
Sure. Let's go.
You know,
get over here.
Go ahead. Believe me, I'm probably going to sing the praises of Catherine Hahn.
Well, that's coming up. That's later in the show. Yes.
But you know, that's never going to be me. What I criticize, I will criticize the hacky premises. I will criticize the lazy writing.
Yeah.
And I you know what? I can't look at a lot of those claims of stealing and just completely
dismiss
them.
No, and we've covered that on the show.
Right.
So we've covered.
I think there was
stealing.
A little bit of smoke to that.
Look, it happens. You know, you do enough shit. You do enough shows. You do enough. Things when you have to churn out material in a regular fashion, an hour a year, going to be hard to be original at that point.
Well,
so.
And that's the problem. I just think that the fame got too much for her.
Mm. Yeah, you know? Amy's in her career is now. What would you say should be her next step? Because she got rid of the sketch show, which was doing great and people loved it, and. Clearly was a big hit for Comedy Central. I mean, you almost can't go back to that. I mean, those things have a shelf life. Guys do 3-4 years of those, and that's enough. You know, like Chappelle.
Yeah, even the Kroll
and Mencia
show,
and Kroll and all these guys. Yeah. They do it, you know, Key and Peele.
Right.
They do them for a certain amount of time, and they go, hey, that's enough. Let's not ruin the legacy of this. So I don't know. I don't know what the next step is.
I think she
What should it be? Oh, great comedy
I think she's probably going to be better served by stripping it down, not just into bikinis to do movies.
Sure.
But I think she got her scale got a little too big. She's on every, like, you know, she's on all these beauty magazines and stuff. And she got exposed, too exposed.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot like Ronda Rousey in UFC.
I would recommend that
too much too soon.
I would recommend she does a, listen to me. Like, I was just bitching about comedy managers, and suddenly you're asking me to give advice.
I do.
I would say that she dials it down and does like an 8-episode Netflix or Hulu
show.
That
would be okay, yeah. And Aziz Ansari's Master of None.
The formula is there for you.
Yeah.
Louis, Aziz Ansari, Marin, all these people.
Maria Bamford.
Maria Bamford's show is really funny. You do that.
Mm-hmm.
Go,
yeah, maybe.
Back down a
take
little
Amazon's
bit.
Take Amazon's money, take Netflix money, take
but
Hulu
just,
money,
but
go do that.
But the big, and you know what? Nobody, by the way, no comics other than, all right, in the history of the medium, Seinfeld is probably the most, like, big act that continued to be a big act. You know what I mean? Like, and Leno can still go out and do stuff, but he's also over his, past his sell-by date, whatever.
Chris Rock is still hot.
Chris Rock, there's a handful.
He's maintained. I mean, he made 10 bad movies, but still Chris Rock is still hot.
But it's very rare. Eddie Murphy hasn't done a comedy special in 25 years.
Eddie was afraid, but Eddie is also a guy that you kind of look at that and go, he did quit. I mean, The problem with Eddie, I think I would respect Eddie quitting stand-up if he didn't make the shitty movies and just made something else or, you know, something smart or did a talk show or something. But Eddie went and made, like, children's movies, and
he got on a treadmill of that.
Yeah.
He got stuck in a treadmill.
Well,
he started making,
and no offense to it, the black-centric stuff ruined his draw, too. Harlem Nights and all that stuff was a mistake.
Saying Boomerang was the problem?
Yeah, he started really appealing to that audience.
Which, by the way, I like Boomerang.
Okay, but I mean, you could talk about, you know, Life and Vampire in Brooklyn and all that stuff and going, he started getting too much into that audience and appealing too much to that, I think. And, you know, that's a problem. That's mistakes from 20 years ago, but that was like his Eddie Murphy in the 90s.
But did Eddie Murphy ever really, I mean, I guess like Trading Places and...
Well, Golden Child and Beverly Hills Cop
were very crossover
mainstream. Whiteys loved Eddie Murphy in that shit.
Yes, I think much like Chappelle later on, I think Eddie was bothered by that.
Yeah, but you shouldn't be.
I think Eddie
was telling him, come home to the motherland, and that was bad advice.
I think Eddie was bothered by being a crossover star and we don't know shit about fuck, but... I think Eddie was...
By the way, I think I just found the title for the show.
Thank you, yeah.
put that on iTunes. Yeah. We don't know shit about fuck. You'll never find it. Yeah,
that'll shoot right to the top. But you know what I mean? I think
it's
Eddie...
the one thing I think I know about.
Yeah, exactly.
That's one thing I'm good at.
Really?
Yeah, right. You know, you can
call in at 610-552.
I could line up the X's in here. That's what I'm good at.
That's going to be a good show. You know, our friend John Tenney said he wanted to do an art project.
Yeah.
Where all his ex-girlfriends, like, just stood on little stages with a little spotlight on them. And you'd, like, walk around the gallery.
And they'd tell him how weird Tenney was.
Yeah, and they'd just tell you how weird he was. And I'm like, that's a genius idea.
Tenney.
Yeah, John should really do that.
Yeah, if ideas.
And he should put, like, a little card next to them. You know, like
if ideas were money, Tenney'd be a billionaire.
Right. The flighty redhead.
I got to get him back in here.
Yeah, we'll get Tenney in here.
Let's get Tenney back in.
He's doing Comic-Con this weekend.
Well, good for him. That's his.
But I back to Amy.
That's Tenney's biggest weekend.
It is.
Maybe. Actually, he probably does some shit in Kentucky where he looks for Bigfoot that pays him better
money.
John's
doing great. Like, he's going on
cruises
and stuff. And people pay him to go fly out to, you know, Vancouver and look for Bigfoot. But. Amy Schumer should look for a better writer.
Yeah,
look for. She got too big, too bad.
Tenney should talk about. You keep going. I'm sorry.
No. What? What?
You go ahead. I want to go into the next bit.
Oh, you want to go into the next bit? You're eager.
Good. Yeah, I'm eager.
Well, anyway, Amy Schumer, take a little time off, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe call, because you also get in that. I think she got on that. Showbiz treadmill.
Well, but
you get agents, managers, and hairstylists, and you end up getting a bunch of mouths to feed.
But you also, maybe she waited too long to capitalize on Trainwreck. I mean, it's been like 3 years, right? 2 years, 3 years?
Look, again, I worked with her in 2013.
And she made Trainwreck in
2015. It's 2017. Yeah. Where it's only been 4 years. Yeah. This is not like, although that's a long time in show business.
No. All right, let's talk about what we're
good
at.
Maybe she'll get a sitcom on CBS so they can cancel it like all their other shows.
Let's talk about what we're good at. Eating junk food.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what we're going to talk about next. There's my segue.
That's a real big jump.
So we've done the stunt Oreos before on this show, and we were probably early to the birthday cake Oreos. And ultimately, after doing that once or twice, I decided that here's the deal with Oreos, and I broke it down for you, where Oreo is basically saying, we're going to make these Oreos. And the Oreos are not going to be very good. And my feeling is you make these stunt Oreos in order to sell the regular Oreos. You go, hey, look, nothing's better than the real Oreo. So here's this shitty Oreo. You buy this because you haven't bought an Oreo because America's health conscious. Then you realize regular Oreos are better. And then you go and sell more regular Oreos. And I feel that way about all of these stunt foods. I feel that about Starbucks. You're not drinking Starbucks coffee anymore. So here's this unicorn frappuccino that gets you in the door, and then you buy more Starbucks coffee. And yeah, you do sell the limited run Oreo in the interim, and that gives you a little spike, but you do that cools off. You can't sell birthday cake Oreos in perpetuity and banana flavored Oreos. And
I think
all this
they
shit.
Do sell the birthday cake ones.
Those... Well, some of them I think have hit. I think the mint ones. I think the peanut butter ones were very good when we had those. But
well, okay, mint and peanut butter are probably permanent.
They're staples. I think. They're Girl Scout cookie flavors.
Those two make sense.
Yeah.
Because, again, the basic core of the whole Oreo premise is, does it go with chocolate?
Well,
Okay, yeah. So mint and peanut butter go with chocolate. That's sure. what an Oreo... I know there's vanilla Oreos and all other bullshit flavors, but...
Well, the regular cream is a milky
cream. All
I
know is that somehow we ended up not being... Mm-hmm. Oreos weren't enough.
Yeah.
Somehow for like 150 years, Oreos were enough, whenever they started.
Well, again, I think people got health conscious. Oreo is a very old brand. And I think Oreo cookie sales were dropping off. And they figured, well, how do we get people back to Oreos? And now it's been a couple of years of these stunt Oreos. But I got roped in, man. I was walking down. And look, I've lost 80 pounds. I've been completely health conscious for the last 10 months and not eating any sweets and anything.
All right.
Got roped in.
The Oreo was created in 1912.
Exactly. So it's 100 years old, yes.
From 1912 to about 2002, there was one flavor of Oreo.
Well, here's what
That was it.
So I got roped in. I went and bought some stunt Oreos for the purposes of this show. And I was, here's what I did. Last week, I said, I'm going to buy these. Corey will come on next week. We'll try them on the show.
Yes.
And Corey will get to go home with a parting gift of a box of Oreos.
Okay.
In the interim, I ate 95% of these, and so we have very few left to eat on the show, so I liked them. In fact, I pulled out, in lieu of showing you the packaging, I put some in a plastic bag, so I'm going to hand these to you for you to examine, and then I do have instructions before you eat, but take a look and give us your first impression.
So I have to figure out what these
on
are.
On a visual, if you want to try, but I just want you to eat them, so tell people what you're seeing.
Well, they look like a conventional Oreo, except that they have little...
So what does the filling look like?
They have little sprinkles in
it. Chocolate cookies with white
there's little
white insides.
A confetti color little sprinkles.
Okay.
All right.
Now, here's my instructions as you eat these.
Okay.
I want you to eat it slow, and I want you to eat it as close to the mic as you can.
Oh.
And that is a hint at its flavor. Corey.
Okay.
Eat it slowly. Don't eat it too fast. Savor the flavor. See if you can figure out what's going on. What's your initial impression?
Well, I think there's little sparkles in there that have some kind of... Is this Pop Rocks? Is that what this is?
Look at Corey Hall. Yes. I cannot fool...
Wow.
This new segment called Fool the Fat Man has failed. Because what you are eating... Fool the Fat Man. I think maybe that's the title for the show. You are eating fireworks Oreos with popping candy. I'm guessing these are 4th of July.
Okay.
Sort of Memorial Day themed. It's a red, white, and blue sort of firework. I have two left for me to eat.
Okay.
That's why I said eat them slow. Because if you ate them fast, you may just go, they're just an Oreo. Because it's sort of a subtle thing. I found if you eat it slow, you can feel the popping.
Yeah.
In your mouth. If you eat it fast, you may not even notice it. Yeah. And I'll try one here. I got a couple.
Now, a couple months ago.
But the smell and the look is conventional Oreo.
Mm-hmm.
And then you eat slow. I'm trying to have people hear my popping.
Yeah. You know, it's another great episode where we chew into a microphone.
That's fine. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
Can you hear that? Can you hear that? Cork, can you hear it?
There's a little popping.
Popping.
I hope somebody's listening to this in their car and they just vomited all over their dashboard.
Well, earbuds. That's the problem. If you got your earbuds in, you're disgusted right now.
You can really hear this. If you did just pop this in your mouth, you would not initially notice it, but there is a little bit of a... I had a Pop Rock about 2 months ago for the...
You must have been disgusted.
No, another comedian whipped out a bag of Pop Rocks out of her purse. And I looked and went,
you got to tell me who did that.
Simply Chanel.
My goodness. Yeah. That's not who I would have picked.
No.
They're going to say Alan Stakowitz. She's 12 years old.
No, Chanel is not in the age bracket.
No, Chanel's our age and a black woman. But anyway.
She pulled a bag of Pop Rocks out of her purse.
The fuck is
and
that?
I just went, wait, they still make Pop Rocks? So I had to have a little handful of them, and Oh, yeah, you can hear them popping. That's really...
Probably just sounds like static, but...
You can audibly hear those,
I think. Gaining up my mic.
I'm interested... Oh, God.
There you go, yeah.
So...
Do you have one left, or did you...
I have one left, yeah.
Okay, I do, too. So, give me a review, then. I mean, first of all... Well, is this... Let me ask you this, because I wouldn't know. Is this the standard size for a package of Oreos? This seems tiny to me.
That's what they're doing now,
it's 10.7 ounces, but I'm guessing they downsized the Oreos and kept them the same price?
Was it three rows of cookies?
It's three rows of cookies, but it seems short. It's like a square. It's not an oblong rectangle of Oreos.
I don't know if they just changed the packaging. It seemed like the bag used to be longer.
Yeah, it seems like you're getting gypped with these, which is another reason why I'm glad I don't buy this crap. But I'm enjoying these. I don't know. Fuck it.
I think these work because they are 85% regular Oreo.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. You're not turned off by anything that's not an Oreo flavor.
It's not watermelon.
No.
I don't usually have Oreos because the wife forbids the other flavors.
She's a traditionalist.
My wife is a complete fundamentalist. She's an Oreo fundamentalist, and she will not even allow any other flavor of Oreo. I might sneak a peanut butter in there.
Right.
But in general, because I'm always like, ooh, I'm the dummy.
Yeah, you're the guy. You're the exact guy that they market the specialty Oreo to. You are that guy.
I'm the dummy that goes, barbecue Oreos. That man.
Well, but you're the guy that buys the special Lay's potato chips that they put out.
Oh, I do.
You're the guy that buys the funny Doritos that come out. You're the guy that tries the Taco Bell item. That's weird, right? You're that guy.
I mean, not all the time, but I am a little more successful.
You are the guy that is.
Who's, by the way, okay, speaking of that.
Yeah.
Who's going to, the one place I do enjoy whenever they do new Lay's flavor, I do enjoy that. I'm susceptible to this kind of stuff. And the smoked Gouda ones were awesome. And I feel like they're not going to bring those back. But they have, you know, the salsa ones, they just had like queso and salsa. That was good. Anyway, the one area where I'm confused by this, and I don't understand why they're even doing it, is White Castle.
Yeah, I don't know.
White Castle's like, we've got Belgian waffle sliders, and they just had crab cake sliders.
Vegetarian bean burgers and stuff.
And I just said, who's going to go get a crab cake?
I don't know.
At a White Castle?
Yeah, that is odd.
What kind of bizarre, deranged maniac?
Yeah. But again, maybe they're trying to just bring in people who don't want those burgers because they're trying to be healthy.
But I feel like the whole point of fucking White Castle.
Yeah.
Is maybe once a year I'll go, I'd like some White Castle.
Yeah, I'd like a gut bomb.
Now, you used to eat them a lot.
Well, there's one close to my house, which helps, you know, if you're getting them on a regular.
You know, here's what the new thing is now.
I had them once a month when I was eating that shit, probably. And that's not much, right?
And we once a month? Probably went and got White Castles on the show.
You increased my consumption of White Castles.
Yeah, okay.
When I was with you, I was more likely to get White Castle as opposed maybe to an, I don't know, maybe. I don't know. I was fat. I was eating there.
All right, there's a black bean slider at White
Castle.
Yeah,
exactly. See?
Now, for the basis of there are vegetarians that need to eat shit.
Yeah.
I guess that the black bean slider is okay, fine. And I can even see that being a regular menu item. Mm-hmm. There's a bacon jam slider.
Yeah.
Now they're trying to... This baffles me when they go, guys are making their own bacon jam and they're making artisanal pickles and they're whiskey age. They're putting beer in whiskey barrels and aging it. How can I, at White Castle, steal a little bit of this thunder?
Well, let me ask you this. Where is... Here you go. Hey, White Castle. If you're a White Castle executive and you want to get promoted or you're an underling at White Castle, I just kind of made your career. So you know that house with the pool that you want? Here it comes, guys.
Okay.
The White Castle food truck. I'm standing up.
Holy shit.
I'm standing up and I'm going to raise my arms in celebration.
All right.
How big would that be? Big would the White Castle food truck be?
I do see one.
Would it be gigantic?
Yes, it seems like a lock solid... seems like a rock solid pick, but I see one downfall of it.
Yeah.
How long does it take you to go to a goddamn White Castle? They take forever, the drive. That's the slowest
drive. But do you feel that the food truck would be more efficient?
I feel like the food truck will get bogged down. Because what they do with White Castle is they individually grill all the burgers
to order,
stuff,
yeah.
And it takes forever. And you're like, why do these little burgers take so long?
Yeah, it's the thickness of a dime, and it takes 20 minutes. Why is that?
And yeah. I once spent 3 hours in a drive-thru in Detroit at a White Castle.
But I always feel like it's because of... Oh, boy, this is going to get ugly. I feel like sometimes it's the fault of the staff.
No, that would look...
because the staff is maybe not the sharpest people. Look, if you want to work fast food...
If you're a newcomer
but I'm saying
Joel Radio, you don't remember when it was Corey and Joel Radio, we had a recurring segment called Drive Through Theater.
We did. We went to Popeye.
And we would take an audio field recorder, and we would drive through various fast food restaurants.
KFC. I know we did KFC and Popeye's.
The White Castle episode was tremendous because the staff was having a fight over the intercom.
Yes, I don't know where you get that now, but...
Is that even on the arc? Was that
it was a bonus feature. Yeah, that's not even on the regular show.
We should do something with the bonus archives.
You know, I could probably start putting them at the end of the show, maybe. I guess that'd be one thing to do with them.
We did a bonus episode, and we overheard the staff being like, "I told you, goddammit, Jerome, get your ass over the kitchen." You know, and they were like fighting in the it was over the little
funny
speaker box.
That was a good
I told you to get the broom.
Boy, we were geniuses, weren't we?
Oh.
We were real innovators.
Ahead of
podcasting.
Our times.
We were fucking great.
And that was literally the
segment.
We're
still okay.
We would drive. Now, we've gotten lazy. Right. Look, we'd drive through, and we'd buy food, and then we'd see how long it took us to get the food.
Yeah.
And then we would review the food. Thank you. Fat guys, really innovating.
Yeah, that was a thing. But yeah, White Castle, I'm telling you, White Castle.
I'm just never
going to
roll into White Castle because of the crab cake slider.
Castle. All your outdoor summertime events, outside the flea market, your White Castles, your burgers, your fries, your sodas, big time. Big money is right there. It's right there. Reach out and take it, White Castle. It's all you.
It sounds like a good premise.
Okay.
You know,
maybe you have to have a White Castle staffer with a driver's license, and that could be a problem. Someone's got...
That's true. Or without priors. Well, and that's the other thing. Why don't they, you know, that's amazing that the fast food companies have not started doing food trucks.
We see stuff.
Now, who would fall for the Burger King food truck?
No, but you see, like, a Red Coat Tavern food truck, and they sell their burgers outside and catering and stuff. And
I have seen,
like, that's a thing.
Is there a Buffalo Wild Wings food truck?
Maybe. It's like, just food trucks are, by the way, listen.
Play it out.
As a white guy, I'm ashamed with white people's devotion to food trucks.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like you can take any piece of shit food and sell it out of a food truck, and people go, well, this is gourmet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying some of them aren't chefs, and I'm not saying some of them aren't good food. I'm not saying you can't get good food from a food truck. But it seems like the food truck makes it good for some reason. I don't know why that is. Like, you know, a taco out of a food truck is way better than a taco in a restaurant.
So many years ago, I worked in a warehouse when I was like a teenager. And since we worked in a warehouse, a food truck would come like 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy would pull up in his truck with sandwiches and chips and whatever. And you'd buy the stuff off the, that was a food truck.
Yeah.
Or
it was a guy selling tuna sandwiches.
Or they go to a construction site.
Yeah.
And then sometimes they have like a hot special of the day or whatever, you know, or
chili dogs,
ponies. Sloppy Joe's, whatever crap. And they'd pull up to construction sites or warehouses or whatever, and that would be for the working man to go get the food truck.
Ham sandwiches, hot turkeys, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
So then somehow, as hipsters do with everything, they take something authentic. And blue collar or lower class or urban or whatever. Yeah. And they're like, let's take, you know, those guys that like have long bushy mustaches because they, you know, work in the arboreal forest chopping down trees. Let's start wearing that around Portland and start making that look cool.
Now they're stealing their food.
Now, I believe that the food truck revolution started in Los Angeles with Kogi. Korean barbecue.
Okay.
Which was a guy, which was a like high quality famous chef.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's the guy that they based Fresh Off the Boat around.
Oh, okay.
And I think he hates the show.
Well, isn't that sort of the story of Chef?
Yeah.
A little bit. I think it's that movie.
The guy's name is, believe it or not, Roy Choi.
Okay, yeah, Roy Choi.
And Roy Choi was a high-end restaurant, you know, culinary education and all that kind of stuff. And he said, why don't I go work at a, you know, why don't I go take this on the road?
And he would just, like, park it outside the club or whatever, or, you know, late night.
Now, I remember around 2003 or 4 partying in Hollywood, and you'd walk out, and there were guys on the street, and this guy was a genius, and I loved him. He had a griddle, and he was making hash browns and eggs.
Okay.
And it was the only time I ever saw street breakfast.
Well, you could always get, like, back, you know, when we were 19, 20, 21, you get gyros, maybe hot dogs on the street. You can get those in Detroit or anywhere there were bars.
At some point, they decided that...
New York, of course, has had their cellars, hot dog carts and stuff.
Much like the Oreo was only one flavor.
Falafels.
The Oreo was only one flavor through most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
There was a cart.
Yeah.
If your guy was selling food on the street, it was a cart.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow they decided the truck was this new...
Right, well, that's a more all-season thing.
And I guess you could do a higher volume and all kinds of...
But now it's guys with, like, lobster rolls, and it's every ethnic thing, and barbecue, and fucking hot pretzels, and waffles, and just everything.
Well, and there's a food truck festival in your neighborhood in the summer called Pig and Whiskey.
I can do better than that.
Which... is all just barbecue trucks.
Okay,
but that's what I'm saying. That one is
exactly.
There's like premium vodka distillers and barbecue.
I think it was the old Wing Hing on 9 Mile is now the food truck restaurant.
Uh-huh.
It is called, what's it called? What the fuck? They put up the sign already. Is it Feeder or something? It's got a stupid name. But basically, it's going to be all food trucks outside, and you just grab your shit and go eat inside.
Okay.
And it's going to be the parking lot of the Chinese restaurant, and now you'll go in.
But isn't
the
whole purpose of the food truck to eat outside?
I guess you'll be able to eat outside in the summer, and in the winter you go inside or whatever. But yeah, that is a whole restaurant of food trucks now we have
now,
here in Ferndale, Michigan, home of the gay and the hipster white guy. All right. Well, let's get into hipster stuff. We've talked about television, and of course, hipsters love they streaming.
They do.
You got to get that Netflix, man.
That's
if you're a cord cutter, that cable's by the man. You know what we're gonna do, man. We're gonna support Amazon and Netflix because they're indie. They're cool, man.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, they're not. That is funny. That is a funny concept. That is who
hipsters
like now.
I hate these multinational corporate bastards, right. So I'm going to go do, I'm going to watch some shit on Google.
I'm going to watch YouTube,
which is owned by Google.
Well, that is also how I feel about, and I think we've talked about it on the show, you know, Trader Joe's and Whole Foods, where it's people like, oh, God, these corporations are killing us, but damn it, we're gonna get all our food at Trader Joe's, because that's not a German multinational conglomerate.
Now, I will say this in defense of Trader Joe's, and we've talked about this on the show before.
Yeah.
Aldi and Trader Joe have the same parent company.
They do.
In Germany.
Mm-hmm.
It was like brothers, and they had a fight, and they split off. Yeah. Trader Joe's is a delight. Aldi is a gulag. It's you know what I mean? It's like a Soviet gulag. It's like...
I don't think I've ever darkened the door of an Aldi, but I know people that shop.
Here's the deal with Aldi. It's like you have... First of all, you need a quarter to get a cart.
Yeah.
The carts are chained up.
Nickel and dime you from the get-go.
Well, no, they give you the quarter back, but you have to have a quarter.
It's a deposit.
Right. You have to have a quarter in your pocket to go to. So you have to think ahead.
Hey, man, I can't get a cart at Aldi, man. What happened to Farmer Jack, man? I used to have the best ones under the underpass.
I don't know why the crackheads are hanging out at Aldi.
Because they can't get a cart. Yeah. They can't get a quarter.
Well, they can't steal the cart. Right. The carts are all...
That's why they have the quarter.
They're in this interlocking chain system, right? So you put a quarter in and pull one out.
It's the airport luggage cart system, yeah.
Now, but that means that Aldi's already annoying because oftentimes I don't have cash on me. Yeah. If I have cash on me, it's because I just did a comedy gig that paid in cash. But, you know, so then you have to think ahead and go, all right, I need to put a quarter in my pocket so I can get a goddamn cart to go to shop at Aldi. Aldi does have decent, like... You can get here's what I do at Aldi. It's like you can get a deal on shit that you wouldn't care about. You know what I mean? Like boxed stuff and canned goods.
Yeah.
but I don't really like the produce.
People
at
say
Aldi.
People say the meat and the produce is a good value there. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's a little sketchy. It's not
it's
as
not
good.
As
the
good
fruits
as
fruits bruised
top.
And stuff. Mm, okay. And it's just a bummer in there.
Yeah.
It's like, and then Trader Joe's. You go in there. And it's the happiest fucking place on earth.
Everything's written on chalkboards, man.
It's awesome, man. No, but it's like...
I've been to Trader Joe's.
All,
that
all,
I've been into.
You can get a little Dixie cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Or tea or whatever.
There's samples
There's
everywhere.
Always samples.
Yeah. Fresh flowers.
It's like a yoga pants like collector.
Yeah.
It's just all girls in yoga pants.
It's
you know what I mean?
A heavily tattooed cashier staff.
Oh yeah. It's like a hipster pussy smorgasbord in there.
It is.
Why don't you put that as the title for
Well, and there's so many possible titles. So where do we go?
Ding, hipster pussy smorgasbord.
Yeah.
It really is though. You go in there and you're like, "Oh, I think I dated her."
Yeah.
Oh shit. Yeah. It's a wonderland and the prices are pretty good. Although the thing with Trader Joe's is they have a lot of lost leaders where you go,
yeah.
Oh my God, I can't believe this Sumatran coffee is $4.
Yeah.
And then they sting you with something else. You know
right,
what I mean? But
yeah.
You can go into... Oh,
it's a buck for an ear of corn, but yeah.
Yes. It is feasible, though, to go to Trader Joe's and get a bunch of stuff reasonably cheap.
They have deals.
But I've never gone into Trader Joe's under the illusion that I was going to a pirate ship.
Yeah.
I've never went in there and went, "We're fighting the man with Trader Joe's."
Who's the coffee? Charles, what's the name? Two Buck Chuck, Charles.
Yeah, well, yeah, they have
that
their
own... the wine. I'm
well,
sorry,
what,
not the coffee.
What
the
Aldi
wine.
And Trader Joe's
Two Buck
do,
Chuck.
And there's a term for it, and I can't think of it, but what they cross pack or what do they call it? They basically you go in there and they have Cheez-Its.
Yeah.
But they're called cheese slaps.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Trader Joe's has a lot of their own house brands.
Well, and it's the same thing. Walmart uses the same suppliers, but they up.
Right.
They trade, you know.
So if you go to Aldi,
yeah.
Now Aldi will have the Cheez-Its.
Yeah.
But there will be a lot of stuff where you go, "Oh, these are Fritos. These are Fritos."
Yeah.
And they're the same thing. So
yeah, Trader Joe's has like, because I know some like from roommates and girls I've dated buy the Trader Joe brand cookie.
Yes.
And it's terrible. It is the you know, like whatever Oreos, okay?
Uh-huh.
That would be like the dollar store Oreo.
Right.
And not the real Oreo, but at Trader Joe's they put their label on it and it's like more expensive than the Oreo, but it's a piece of shit or whatever. It's the same, you know what I mean? It's like not they don't really have Oreos at Trader Joe's cuz they want to be cool,
yes.
But they have the knockoff Oreo with a different label. That's what I think they do, right?
Generally, I'm happy with the products at Trader Joe's.
Okay, I've had some bad stuff.
Well, the, but
bad what, biscotti.
What you probably had was the I do like the little chocolate dunkers. No, I'm just saying, these are like, they're like cookies that you dunk in your coffee. Those are good.
Corey, put chocolate on anything. You're, there's nothing you don't like.
No, but the problem with Trader Joe's is they not only do they have their own... We're in all God. We go down.
I'm talking about a show on goddamn Amazon.
Right,
let's go.
We'll get back to the Amazon.
Come on,
show.
Give it to me.
The whole thing with Trader Joe's is they will not only have their own like in store brands, but they'll have that health food like Amy's.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. No, I know.
And they'll have that Puffins.
Yeah, yeah.
Which
yeah.
many a
oh my goodness.
Which many a tarot card loving,
yeah.
Feminist bookstore shopping girlfriend of mine in the past has made me eat.
Oh, I know.
And those are never good. Those are like a torture. Where they. No
it's
one,
like candy in a bowl.
Yeah, no one's ever.
I'm addicted to puffins.
Yeah, take your puffins, your pirate's booty. Take your pirate's booty, your puffins, your
right.
kale chips.
No, there's another one.
Kale can go in a salad. Don't make a goddamn chip out of it. No, you're not fooling anybody.
Yeah. Well, I think there is
quinoa
a thing.
Chips? Fuck you.
There are people who are trying to be healthy and then they eat this kale that's been deep fried in oil.
Yeah.
And then they go, "Oh, fuck, these are great." You know, like veggie chips.
Right.
This thing Heather, my ex, does. She does the veggie chips. And she's trying to, like, I need to make these.
Uh-huh.
So she buys a dehydrator, and I go, "No, they're deep fried. That's why they taste so good." And she's like, "I dehydrate them, and they're not the same."
Well, I dispute
like,
that veggie chips taste so good. But
well, they're dipped in oil, and mm-hmm. then they're fried. Or they're fried in oil, and then they're salted. And it's like, they're not just dried vegetables.
They
it's
might,
not what you think
they
it
might
is.
Not be as salted as a regular potato chip.
No, but it's basically instead of processed corn, which is what Cheetos and Fritos and all that stuff is,
right?
It's just a fucking it's a
it's
green
a processed
bean.
Tomato. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's a green bean or it's a piece of you know
right.
tomato or a piece yeah. of something. So.
The veggie
piece
chips,
of cauliflower.
The veggie chips are very good actually as a format for dipping.
Okay.
Because they're a relatively neutral flavor.
But you can dip a piece of cardboard in ranch and it'll be good.
That's what I'm saying. They don't interfere with anything, though. You can dip them in hummus or whatever and they're good.
Let's talk.
I could talk about food all day because
I know, and that's why we're not. That's why we're not.
Welcome back to the Goblin Gourmets with Joel and Corey.
So what I said about one of these hipster shows on streaming, it's called I Love Dick. It's on Amazon Prime, so it is a provocative title.
Could you just say the name of that title again?
I Love Dick.
Now, if we were a traditional radio show, that would be a poll. That'd be a drop, right? That would be
I Love Dick. I love dick.
Yeah.
I love dick.
I so wish we had.
I've done it three ways with different emphasis on each one.
I so wish.
For your soundboard needs fans. Please take that and do it.
I so wish we had like an engineer that we could be like, all right, now pull that. Isolate the I love
dick. I'm sure there's a-holes who listen to this who can make a version of me talking about how I love dick.
But anyway.
It's on Amazon Prime. It is based on a novel called I Love Dick, which is, I guess, a true story that this woman wrote about her life. Now, it is a memoir more than, like, you know, so it is her version of what happened in real life. But basically, it's a story of a woman who is a filmmaker, and she moves with her husband, who's an author, to an artist compound. On the show, it's in a place called Marfa, Texas, which apparently is home to artists in the Southwest. And I guess in real life it took place in Northern California, but for this purposes, it was shot in Marfa, Texas, and you see a lot of that. Catherine Hahn is the wife. Her husband is Griffin Dunn, who's a good actor. You don't see in too much stuff, but Griffin Dunn's been around for a long time and done some good things and done some shitty things.
What's the Scorsese movie with him? Short Time?
Oh, After Hours.
After Hours.
Which is kind of Scorsese at his most coked up and
it's
crazy.
A weird movie.
But Griffin Dunn's good in that, and he's good
Griffin
in this.
Griffin Dunn plays the friend that gets mauled in American Werewolf in London.
Yeah, that was an early role for him. And Kevin Bacon plays the title role of Dick.
Yes.
Who is the guy who runs this artist's compound and this institute, who is employing Griffin, and Catherine Hahn is the wife that shows up and becomes infatuated with her husband's boss, played by Kevin Bacon as Dick. And it's weird. It is about obsession and sex and infidelity and all of these things.
It's about the most insufferable people.
Yeah, kind
of.
Yeah.
Well, this is from producer Jill Soloway. Mm-hmm. Who made the equally insufferable Transparent.
You know, here's the thing about Transparent. I've talked about it before on the show. It's a well-done show that is great actors. His shot looks incredible. Looks like the best. I've said about Transparent. It looks like the best shot indie movie you'll ever see. It looks like an art house movie. That's how I heard Kevin Bacon describe this show on when he was talking to Mark Maron about it's an art house movie that's expanded to a television show. And that's kind of what it is. It's 8 half-hours, and they're even shorter than a half hour.
Yes.
They're like 24 minutes, depending upon the show. I watched all 8 episodes, and I enjoyed it. I am giving it my recommendation. Is it for everyone? No, I wouldn't recommend this to my 72-year-old dad to watch.
No.
But I say if you have, if you enjoy some indie art house stuff, if you enjoy streaming stuff that is adult, tons of nudity in this, lots of tits, lots of bush, not lots of bush, but enough bush, more than you would see, obviously, on most shows, you get bush,
I do feel that
you get
this,
tits.
All right, so what, it's 8 half-hours.
It's about 4 hours.
It's about 4 hours.
A little less than 4 hours. Yeah.
I do think that this premise probably would have been fine at a 2-hour limit.
Well, I don't know if they're going to make another season. I think it ended, I know you watched some of this. How much did you finish?
I got about halfway through, so I didn't see the... I think I watch about four of them. So
and there's a girl on this show. There's a redhead on this show who's one of the supporting actresses.
Yes,
India Menuez is her name.
Uh-huh.
And
not the name you would expect.
A lily white redhead.
You thought her name was Ariel Mc.
McMick. She does nudity that is mind blowing. In this show,
gotten to that episode.
No, it's worth watching. It's worth waiting for. And there's an actress, and first of all, Catherine Hahn, who we've talked about only probably a couple weeks ago, who we both love, looks great.
Yeah,
full topless. You got to wait for episode 2, but Catherine Hahn topless.
Yeah,
having sex,
great
having
sex
orgasms,
yeah,
gives
yeah,
a hand job at one point in the show. It's great,
all for it. And she was naked in Transparent.
Yeah, she's been naked in a lot of stuff over the years, but.
you know, there's an actress, because they do the backstory at one point. They take some time. And I think that might be how they expanded this, is they did an episode that, I don't know if you got to that one, where it's like all of the characters' backstories.
Aside,
and them
even,
as young people.
Didn't really advance the story.
No. And they do young Catherine Hahn and how she fell in love with Griffin Dunne, who's much older than her. Mm-hmm. And they have this 20-year-old college girl playing young Catherine Hahn, who is chubby and Jewy and pale with giant hooters. A Corey Hall special.
Let's call her
a Corey Hall special. Right, and she gets fucked, and that's a great scene, and I know you love that. What can I tell you? I enjoyed it. Again, they left it where I think they could do a second season of this if they wanted to. And again, not for everybody. If you like Transparent, I think you'll like this. I think this is... It's funny, I remember I was... I was texting you during this about like the nudity and like, holy shit, you need to see this kind of. I can read the actual ones if you want.
No,
but
it's fine.
But I was kind of like, Corey, you need to watch the show if you haven't.
Don't lower the audience's opinion of us.
But I was like, you kind of need to watch this if you want. But I also said that the first episode is kind of not funny at all. And then it gets funnier and then it ends kind of not funny as well, I think. But I think it's one of those shows where they did the pilot. And then they went like, yeah, maybe we need to punch up the script a little bit and make it a little more humorous. And they do that, but it's still not a sitcom. It's more situationally funny. But it also feels like a Woody Allen movie in a sense where it's like a bunch of people sitting around drinking wine, going to art openings, and you can't relate to them. And then they have hijinks where they're trying to not get spotted at a dinner party and shit like that. It's a lot of that.
Profoundly neurotic.
Exactly.
Intellectual jerk-offs. Griffin Dunne is a Holocaust. He's a Holocaust analyst or a Holocaust. He's a historian.
Yeah, a Holocaust historian, I guess.
And I'm like, there was a big call for that at this artist compound.
I don't even know how he ended up at the artist compound.
I'm not really sure why he's there.
No, it makes no sense.
He's giving lectures on the Holocaust while other people are like splattering paint on the... And Kevin Bacon's...
Yeah, it is very odd. Kevin
Bacon's art himself is really like this idiotic, like... He does these big, dumb sculptures that are like...
It's giant concrete installations in the desert.
Yeah, they're kind of just big concrete blocks. Well, and at one point, he's got a thing on a table that's just a brick.
Yeah, well...
It's literally a brick.
Did you see
and
the
Catherine
one?
Catherine Hahn's like, this is a fucking brick. Why is this a thing? And he's like, I like straight lines.
The Indian guy did a VR video game thing. That was his presentation. I don't know if you got to that one yet. But this guy... And it's funny, everyone puts on a VR... There's a scene where everyone has to put on a VR headset.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Catherine Hahn's there trying to get Kevin Bacon's attention, and they're both wearing VR headsets. And meanwhile, like, if you just wore a VR headset, you would get, like, motion sickness because the VR headset has to move when you... It kind of wouldn't work the way they did it here.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, that's kind of the edgy art that they're presenting. It's kind of weird.
The redhead girl did her college thesis at Stanford on porn.
Yes.
And, like, not about the... about shapes and colors and porn.
Well, and she
just stupid stuff.
They show her doing a presentation to her college, you know, the college teachers or whatever, the college professors on gaping.
Yes.
Which is a pretty funny scene. There's a lot of good stuff to like in there. Again, is it for everyone? No. But if you like that stuff, I think you'll enjoy it. Get your Amazon money worth, I think.
I'm a little kind of conflicted on Jill Soloway. I can't go completely on board with its work, because she was on NPR talking about how she's genderqueer and she doesn't identify as a woman.
Yeah, I dated.
And that's when I
dated that recently.
And that's when I. That's when I tapped out. I'm out.
Hey, by the way, the girl I dated that said the same thing to me at one point also made me watch a full season of Transparent. So it all circles around together. So,
well, that's an interesting...
Like, I tried Transparent on my own and got through, like, one episode and went, like, this ain't for me. And then this girl was like, can we watch Transparent? I don't have Amazon, and I think I'm going to like it. So I watched a whole season with her.
This show I enjoy more.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Because Catherine Hahn is naturally just her neurotic energy is funny.
She's great. She's really good in it.
And I think there are attempts to make humor in this show.
Give her the Emmy.
Whereas Transparent, I personally objected deeply to it being classified as a comedy.
Yeah, I think that show's funnier at the end of the day, maybe. I don't know.
Well, they're just really obnoxious, annoying people.
Yeah.
Let me say it, annoying Jews. Apologies to my beloved friends of the the nation of Israel, Abraham and Sarah. But
annoying Jews living in expensive houses in California?
Yeah.
That bothers you?
What I'm saying is this might not be highly rated in the city of Detroit. I'm just saying.
It's...
I don't. We talked about White Castle and this on the same show.
Well, it's better.
And I don't know if those audiences overlap.
Look, it's better than Detroiters, so you can take that and shove that sideways up your fucking asshole.
Zynga!
And I've reviewed Detroiters already on the show, and it's not worth even talking about. But
the one interesting. Now, I have not seen a lot of Detroiters.
I've
seen maybe two episodes.
A comic I know was on one, and he goes, "Did you watch Detroiters?" And I go, "Yeah." David Luther Glover's on there, and I go. Yeah, I guess I didn't get to yours. I think I turned it off before.
The one episode I watched, they were having an award show. They're advertising.
Yeah.
They're in advertising in this show. That's the premise.
Yeah.
And they were having an award show, and it was shot in our wedding venue.
Hooray!
And I just went, I was like, wait, this room looks familiar.
Mm.
And I was like,
well,
oh, shit, that's where I got married.
Hey.
So it is shot in Metro Detroit.
Detroiters also didn't want to spend money on a location.
Hey-o!
So there you go. Hey-o!
Come on, it was a nice place. You went to the wedding. Hey.
No,
come on.
Sorry.
You went to that wedding. Don't make it out like we had it at a Denny's. We had a nice venue.
Spend $100 on a PA next time. That's my advice. All right, here we go.
That is
a proper complaint.
Joel had to try and fix the sound, and we didn't do a proper sound check.
I brought a wedding date who I never sat with for the whole fucking time.
Oh, man. Did you not? Oh, because you were busy fixing the sound.
He was busy fixing the PA.
Well, I tried not to, like, put... I didn't want Joel to have to, like...
Believe me, I'd been dating her for 5 years at that point.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
I'm sorry about that.
Anyway. Here's more streaming goodness.
I know there were people up in the booth trying to fix stuff.
Here's Netflix. Let's turn our attention to Netflix.
All right.
I watched two things on Netflix over the and since we've seen each other last.
Yeah.
Do you want to know? I got two things. I have two things. I'm going to tell you what they are in general. One of them I recommend people watch, and the other is a stinker. Here's what I got.
Okay.
Here's what I got. One thing good, one thing not good. You guess, Corey. And I don't know if you watched either of these, but you may have and already got it. I watched a documentary called Tower, which is about the 1966 shooting in Austin, Texas, at the University of Texas. I watched a documentary about that. And then I watched Handsome, the Netflix murder mystery starring Jeff Garland as a wacky Los Angeles detective. And one of them was good, one of them not good. Which one should I talk about first? What's your guess as to what was good and what was a piece of garbage?
Corey, well, I've seen...
I turn to you.
I've seen one of these.
Which one did you see?
I saw Tower.
And you thought of Tower?
I liked it a lot.
Tower's great, yeah. Tower is wonderful.
So I think I guess
we're talking about that first. Yeah, Tower was hard to see last year because they were talking about it was going to be an Oscar contender for documentary. I don't think it ended up being nominated. But I think that didn't... Did you see that at a screening?
I saw it on PBS.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, it was weird that it didn't... It was
did
one
not
of those
get,
that didn't air.
It did not get a...
theatrical
no.
thing here.
No.
Netflix has had it for a month or two. Yeah, Tower's great. It is... What they do is they do... And it's weird that... It's funny. I know in documentary circles, there's a lot of concern about movies like this being called documentaries because probably 75% of it is like rotoscoped waking lifestyle animation recreation of what happened there. Because what it is they do have newsreel footage of the actual shooting that happened. And then the stuff they don't have, they cast actors as these people and then they recreated it. And I guess to sort of make it a little less jarring and have the location look more realistic, the animation sort of covers that. And it's beautiful. It's really well done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's funny. And I kind of, in looking it up, went like, what it is the actual shooting took 96 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they tried to make this as real time as they could from the time the first shot rings out till the end of the siege. And interviews with all of the particulars, the ones that are still alive, some that have died since then. And even people that were murdered by Charles Whitman have actors and actresses playing them, describing what happened to them. So it's this weird kind of stew of different styles and different interviews. And it really, you know, I didn't know all that much about this when I saw it. And I'm glad I didn't because I learned a lot. And it was very gripping. It was very intense. It was very real. It was as if you were there. It was very good.
It's great. It's, yeah. I wish it had gotten a little more attention. Yeah.
Well, it's on Netflix now. Anyone can see it. And I watched
in
this.
In the Oscar runs.
And yeah. I'm going to give you another piece of advice.
I think the people that complain about that mm-hmm. format on this movie are a little off the... Because they didn't have footage of the... You know, a couple guys ended up raiding the tower.
Yeah.
They didn't have footage. There is a lot of the actual footage
right.
from the incident.
Well,
but it was never presented as a docudrama. It was presented as a documentary with voiceovers from the actual participants.
The first one I remember getting this kind of shit was Man on Wire, which won the Oscar, yes. where they basically, so much of that was a recreation of the guy walking between the two towers. You know, the World Trade Center, the guy that did the wire walk. And a lot of that was recreation. It was very tense because obviously they had some footage from that day, but the rest of it they made up and they got away with it. And it was considered a documentary by the wacky Academy rules about documentaries. So it was cool. Yeah. And here's the thing I'm going to recommend for people on Netflix too. Like, this is the first time I ever did this on your phone. If you have the Netflix app on your phone and you're a Netflix subscriber, one thing you can do now is you can download the shows to your phone, the movies, whatever. I know it's on the Android app. It's probably on the iOS app as well now. You do have to have a lot of room on your phone, and if you're an iPhone guy, they're so stingy with the space, you might get fucked on that. But you know, I have the Galaxy with the 64 gig SD card in there, so I got no problem with it. Download it. You can download it to your phone. So if you're on a plane, I was on a train in Canada. We'll talk about that when we're done with these movie reviews. And I was able to watch it there. But one thing I will tell you is if you have a high-res phone, like I have a QHD phone or whatever it's called, it's 1440p, you can get the high, you can in the settings select you want the large or the high-res version to download instead of the low-res version. And yeah, I watched it in like HD with earbuds in on a train, and it was great, and time flew really fast. And it was great. So if you're going to be flying and you want to watch something on Netflix, and I believe Amazon and YouTube have that now. I don't know if Hulu does, but that's a great way to watch stuff when you maybe don't have you don't want to burn your data, or you don't have any kind of internet connection. I thought that was really cool. So that was a good way to do it. So that's a way to do that. I watched it. And then the other thing, I guess since we know it sucks.
Yeah, I'm the old man that's never going to watch shows on his phone.
I don't want to watch it on my phone. Also, here's one thing that you're not doing right now is you're rocking kind of an old iPhone that's kind of got a small screen, and it's low res, and I've got the big 5.5-inch. Trust me.
I'm a size queen.
When you have high res on a small screen and headphones, and it's very close to you, it's not bad. I mean, and I was skeptical of it, too. I would have told you, I'll never watch anything on my phone, but when you're on a train for 5 fucking hours,
sure,
and they can't, you're delayed, you know, and it's supposed to be a 4-hour journey, and they're delayed because the tracks got washed out by a fucking flood,
that would
fly.
That would be the only circumstance.
Well, look, I got a 55-inch 4K TV here. I've got a 70-inch 3D television in my living room. I'm not a guy who likes a small screen either. But it was fine for this type of movie in this type of setting. Should you watch a bootleg of Guardians of the Galaxy? You got to review that, too, before we leave. Should you watch a bootleg of Guardians of the Galaxy 2 that was shot with a fucking phone by a guy in the crowd? No. But for this, it worked. All right. Here's the piece of crap on Netflix. I was intrigued by Jeff Garland doing a Columbo-esque detective. I thought that's a home run.
Yeah.
And I watched this without reading a goddamn thing about it. It's Jeff Garland. He's an L.A. detective. His partner is played by Natasha Lyonne. You get Amy Sedaris in a small role. Eddie Pepitone in a small role. Another guy. He's the wacky neighbor who is a rival of Jeff Garland.
Right.
And he's
Eddie Pepitone.
Yeah, Eddie Pepitone getting some work. He's married to... He's married to Leah Remini in this movie.
So there you go.
Okay. Getting some young talent.
Eddie Pepitone and
Eddie Pepitone, Leah Remini are
that's
a couple.
That's only slightly less believable than her and Kevin James.
Well, it's funny because you know Jeff Garland is you know divorced or whatever. He's lovelorn, and his
not
neighbor
Jeff Garland.
Yeah, Jeff Garland can't get laid. Believe it or
I
not.
I want somebody cheese with
yeah,
Jeff
he's
Garland.
Getting laid. Well, it's funny. Jeff co-wrote and directed this, which may explain a lot. Steven Weber is in this. Now, let me explain. I know you're going to go, Joel, you're ruining the handsome murder mystery. Because, by the way, this is supposed to be like Sherlock.
You're going to get a series of these detective stories that take place in L.A. with Jeff Garland as this detective, and this was the first of them, okay?
Yeah.
So here's what they do. Now, I have a reasoning. I'll tell you what I think the reasoning may be for this when they do it. The very first shot of the handsome Netflix murder mystery starring Jeff Garland on Netflix. His name is Handsome. That's his last name. That's why it's called The Handsome Murder Mystery. Is Steven Weber, who you may know from what?
Wings.
Wings. Okay, yeah. So he is emerging from a swimming pool in Los Angeles, California, at a very nice house, grabs a towel, and he says, "I'm actor Steven Weber, and in the movie you're about to see, I play the killer. Enjoy Handsome." And then the movie starts, and then you see Jeff Garland putzing around L.A. and Natasha Lyonne making jokes. And I go, what the fuck did I just see? Did they fuck up somehow? I mean, this thing just came out. Is this supposed to be there? Is this some weird thing that's supposed to be at the end of the movie? What the fuck? Mm-hmm. And I go, oh, it's a red herring. It's a red herring to make you think that he's not the killer. What the hell is this? And then I was reading a little bit about this. I read some reviews, and there's very few online. Apparently Netflix doesn't screen stuff for critics,
no,
when they know it's a piece of shit. Maybe they don't screen anything for critics. I don't know. But maybe this one they don't. I guess somebody said Columbo or one of those shows, you would be ahead of the detective because they wanted you to sort of watch the methodology for figuring out the murder.
Well, in Columbo, on every episode, they're the first act, the first 20 minutes is the murder.
And you see the guy
and
do
you
it?
You see the murder.
Okay.
Then Columbo strolls in.
Okay.
But so it was about the mystery.
But the thing is with Steven Weber here, you don't even see Steven Weber committing the murder. You just see him saying it. So here's my thought, is what they did is they shot this thinking they'd have this great mystery. But since they really didn't have a very good mystery and they didn't have, it wasn't like Murder, She Wrote where like five of these guys could have done it.
Uh-huh.
It was pretty obvious going to be Steven Weber from the get-go. And rather than bringing back the entire cast to shoot stuff of Steven Weber killing the woman, which is the plot of this, they just shot this little opening with Steven Weber in the backyard of the producer's house or something and then tacked it on the beginning to sort of make it not a mystery. And it's like, hey, it's supposed to be funny and you'll enjoy it. And it's this indie L.A. thing. And I was like, no, 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 no. This thing's not funny. It looks like it was shot. Now, granted, this is in 4K streaming, if you have that on Netflix, UHD, whatever. But it just looks like it was made for $3.
Yeah.
And, you know, good actors kind of, you know, shooting one day. You know, Steven Weber probably shot 2 days on this. You know, Amy Sedaris probably shot a day, and some of these other, there's other cameos. I don't even want to spoil other cameos. Not like you're going to watch it now, but it's just not good, man. I wanted to like it. Everything lined up for me, because I will watch a Murder, She Wrote, and I'll watch a Sherlock.
Well, yeah.
And one of these days, as I get older, I will watch the fucking PBS Perot mystery. I will fall into that.
Oh.
I will sit with my hand down my pants at 8 o'clock on a weeknight and watch one of those.
I would say mystery is probably my least favorite genre, but I do love Columbo. I would do, like, if I'm going to watch one, it's a personality-driven, you know what I mean, where it's about the detective.
They made
a
new Murder on the Orient Express. I'll watch that.
Okay.
You know, so I'm in for mysteries on some level. Yeah. But goddamn, this isn't good. So
while we're
Jeff, can't get into it, brother. Sorry,
yeah, maybe
the last Handsome Murder mystery. I don't know what the deal is.
I kind of half liked someone to like eat cheese with. Garland is funny in stuff, and maybe on his own.
He's maybe not the lead. He's better as the funny buddy.
Speaking of funny friend. While we're plumbing the lower depths of Netflix for weird obscurities, I'll do two. One I liked and one I hated. Bob Odenkirk has a movie called Girlfriend's Day.
Okay.
Never heard of it. Yeah, it's Bob Odenkirk, and he cast Amber Tamblyn. So he cast his best friend's wife as his girlfriend.
Who's married to Amber Tamblyn?
David Cross.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
hey now, listen. Listen, you.
I think we're getting some weird crosstalk. We're getting some radio interference on the microphone.
No, no.
David Cross is married to Amber Tamblyn. Good for him.
Oh, man.
Good for David Cross.
Yeah, so it is.
You go get that.
That would be like if I made a movie and cast like Heather as Mike, you know, like it would just be a weird or whatever, you know. You're just like, he gets to make out with his best friend's wife.
All right.
It's a spoof, and he's a hard-boiled, it's like a hard-boiled noir set in the world of a greeting card company.
Okay.
And he's got to write the greeting card, the greatest romantic girlfriend greeting card.
Hmm.
And there's a bunch of guys trying to get him. Hmm. And it kind of works.
Yeah.
I thought I liked it despite it being a little bit of a forced premise. But
yeah.
I thought I just like Bob Odenkirk and the sensibility.
All right.
That he
and
has.
Is that a Netflix original, or was it something that was kind of like,
I believe,
didn't really ever come out and they kind of threw it on there?
I believe it's a, well, maybe that was the case, but it ended up being a Netflix.
Well, once Netflix pays for it, it becomes a Netflix original,
yes.
Even if it was made by somebody else. But
yeah,
I get the feeling Jeff Garland kind of cut a deal to make that with him.
Right.
And then some of these other things, like what was the Children of No Nation, feels like that was probably made by other people because it was made. It looks great.
Right.
And then it became a Netflix thing when
well,
they purchased the
again,
rights.
But, success, you know, success has many fathers. And
yeah.
Failure is an orphan. So we don't know, you know, maybe.
This show is completely me. Corey
right.
takes no blame.
But you also get.
Says so called Jewel Radio. Don't fucking blame me.
That's
it's
why
piece of shit.
That's why I quit. So, you, I'm not responsible
twice.
For any of the Juggalo content.
That's
or
okay.
Any of the,
well, that's
whenever you know.
Hey, that's why I fired you twice since. But anyway, let's go. Let's continue
whenever,
along talking.
But you, some of your favorites, like Natasha Lyonne,
yeah,
is in there.
Yeah, Natasha Lyonne, I like.
June Diane Raphael.
Yeah, she's on this. She's in.
Ed Begley Jr.
Okay, yeah.
So
that's good.
I enjoyed Girlfriend's Day. It's not like the best. Thing on
yeah.
there, but it's worth a look on Netflix.
Okay.
And the one that I was really falsely, I was led into, oh boy.
Led down the garden path.
Yeah. And now this stars another of our favorite quirky actresses.
Yeah.
Melanie Lynskey.
Oh, I heard that was good. No, that's no good.
I hated it. But
oh, what's the name of it?
Now it's got a 62%, which baffles me. 53% audience.
Yeah.
It's called Rainbow Time.
Oh.
And
is that the one I heard about?
All right. No. There's another Melanie Lynskey.
There's one that's like an
I don't know. I don't like the world anymore. What
yeah,
is it called?
That's okay. That's the one I was going to watch.
All right. No, this one is from last year. It's,
oh,
it's
okay.
An indie with Jay Duplass and Melanie Lynskey.
Is this a Duplass Brothers movie?
It was not directed by the Duplass Brothers.
Okay, because they have a deal with Netflix. I don't think they've put anything out yet.
I thought, okay, it's from the same family.
Right, and Togetherness,
I
we
togetherness,
love. Yeah, Togetherness
so
is great, which they fucking canceled, those idiots.
Yes. So I thought, okay, well, this is Melanie Lynskey and the Duplass and all those kind of people. And it's about a guy who's got this, like, slightly retarded boy brother.
Yeah.
And who just ruins every one of his relationships because he's a creepy pervert who likes to hang out the window and watches, you know, the brother... Anytime the brother gets a girlfriend, he starts being inappropriate with her, and it just did not work for me. I thought it was a little too, it was, you know what I mean? It was uncomfortable humor for the point, you know what I mean? They were just milking this weird looking guy.
Yeah, when you got that.
To play him being developmentally challenged, and just gave
sometimes
me the
when
creeps.
People play developmentally challenged, it can be like real insulting, like Cuba Gooding in Radio or something.
Right.
What was the... if we had the drops. The Rosie... Remember the Rosie O'Donnell retard movie?
Yes.
That was like a TV movie on Lifetime or something, and I pulled all the clips about all the...
Oh. I make a cookie mountain!
Do you have chicken fingers?
That was called Riding the Bus with My Sister.
Oh, that was so bad!
I can't believe how quickly you forget.
Rosie was on top of the world then, unlike today.
We played those drops every
day. Oh, my God.
I make a cookie mountain!
Yeah. I know.
This one is, they do stick to the rules set up.
Remember, we used to hate Rosie, and now since Trump's president, we have to kind of like Rosie.
I've softened a little on Rosie.
Oh, I saw Rosie do stand up, and it was kind of good. So I went, fuck, I have to Rosie now, you bitch. God damn you, Rosie.
I just concentrated my.
Fucking fuck.
I just decided the celebrity lesbian I hate is Ellen. So that was really what I just put my energy into hating Ellen instead of Rosie. That was the
that's true.
You know, Rosie had that dopey talk show.
Yeah, it was so bad.
That dopey morning show
where she would
sit there and she was in the closet.
She was in the closet. That was the big problem
with this
that
bullshit
show.
And go, Tom Cruise is a cutie patootie.
Yeah,
and she pretended like she wanted to fuck Tom Cruise.
Yeah,
and that got to be disgusting.
And it was the show that had a false premise.
Right.
I'm just like every housewife out there, and you're like, you're nothing like a, you're a multi-millionaire lesbian who's in the closet who can't fucking, who, you know, is pretending
to be like.
But now
that Rosie's out and owns it, I'm more comfortable with her.
Yeah, she's.
Anyway,
she's,
avoid Rainbow Time.
Avoid it.
Check out Girlfriend's Day.
All right.
Neither of these are. These are super low down indie movies.
Got two things left: Guardians of the Galaxy, and then we got to do pro wrestling because that was. And I saved pro wrestling till the end of the show because I think there's people that won't want to listen to pro wrestling, but maybe want to hear the Guardians of the Galaxy review. Yeah. So let's go into that. I didn't see it. I did like the original Guardians of the Galaxy, although with a lot of Marvel stuff, I see it, and even if I like it, I almost can't tell you what happened a week later and kind of forget it. And yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one, is kind of gone into my brain and left, but I did like it. So how's the second one, Corey?
Well, if you liked the first Guardians of the Galaxy, this will be just the same.
There you go.
It's good. Yeah, it's very colorful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the gorgeous visual effects, just really spectacular. It's a fun, engaging story. Kurt Russell's in there.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not a spoiler.
No.
You know that.
I know there are spoiler cameos, and I heard him, saw him on the internet, but you don't have to do
that. Yeah,
no. So.
Kurt Russell is playing... Chris Pratt's dad. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I had to stop. SNL did the bit with Chris Pine, where he had to explain all the Chris's.
Yeah,
Chris Evans, Chris Hemsworth, and Chris Pratt.
Chris Pratt.
Yeah. Chris Pratt. So Kurt Russell, and they do a weird bit where they de-age Kurt Russell in a flashback.
Yeah, that never works.
And this one is one of the better ones they've ever done.
Well, didn't they do William Hurt in Captain America?
They did Michael Douglas.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And that...
In Ant-Man, yeah.
And considering Marvel has all the money in the world to spend on these things...
And they're doing as good as anyone.
That looked pretty good.
They did Robert Downey Jr. in Captain America.
Okay, right.
Yeah. But yeah, that looked weird.
Yeah, in Ant-Man...
Teenage Robert Downey Jr.
I would say that Ant-Man was the most effective one they've done so far, but you still realize
it's
you're looking
weird.
At Michael Douglas... And in this one, it's, you know, Kurt Russell with that big poofy 70s hair.
Well, they did Jason Segel and Cameron Diaz in Sex Tape. And they only had to shave like 10 years
they
off
had to make them a little younger.
And it was fucking weird, man.
You know,
it did not look good.
You know, I never sat through that
well,
mess.
Well, you and the rest of America were spared Sex Tape, but I watched that with a date.
That was one of the times I appreciated not full-time reviewing?
No, exactly.
But anyway.
I watched that with a date at home.
So Guardians of the Galaxy is good.
But keep going. No, what was again? Radio interference is coming
okay.
in. We got to probably wrap up because everything's... You're hearing things you might think... But it's really just... I think there's a... Riff's tower is like a mile away.
Joel's new character, Mr. Subliminal, is coming into... Darn it, fucking asshole. Yeah, so I would say with Guardians, it's a little bit it's fun, and then you're like enough.
Yeah, well, is it like 2.5 hours or something?
Yeah, and it's kind of like it's
all that Marvel stuff's too long.
It's too much clitoral stimulation. You know what I mean? Eventually, you got to stop hitting that thing.
Yeah,
just back off the man in the boat. Stop flicking it.
Now I heard
there's five post-credit sequences.
Oh, okay. Now I heard that this is more of like it's not because I know they're supposed to at some point, but. It doesn't tie into the Marvel Universe, or would you say it does? Because I heard on a podcast that it doesn't.
It does.
But I thought they're going to hang out with the Avengers or something at some point.
No, none of that happens.
Yeah.
So not to spoil that.
Not
but
in this one.
It is part of the larger story they're telling about Thanos. So
that's
involved in there.
Yeah, see, I don't even know.
But... No, it's not. It's believe me, if you were not
like the timeline's off, where it's they're earlier.
Well,
than
they're out in space, so
Avengers and Civil War and all that stuff.
They're way out in space, so
yeah.
We only see Earth in a flashback. So there's not like you know.
So they're in the future.
No, they're in the current. They're in the present timeline.
Oh, Jesus Christ!
Right,
I don't know.
Right,
who knows?
As far as I
know, because I guess those the Avengers are in the future. A little bit. I don't know. I don't know anymore.
Are they in the future? Well, if
the near future.
They're in the future. They're in like 2021.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
They're like three years ahead.
That's what I'm saying. These Marvel movies are kind of up their own ass at this point, but people still go.
The Marvel Universe.
And they're not as good as they used to be. I think we can all agree on that.
Set in the present day where we have giant flying hover carriers.
Well, that's what I mean.
We
don't have those yet.
No. Whatever.
But, okay.
It connects, but not in a, like... direct way where you have to go, oh, wait, I have to now go see Thor.
Yeah.
Whatever the next Thor is.
Those I've never seen, but I've seen the Captain America ones, liked all those, saw the Avengers, those were all right. I have Doctor Strange on 3D Blu-ray, which I've never watched. So that's something I got to sit down and sit in front of my 70-inch
Thor
3D.
Ragnarok is the next Thor.
And watch that.
You know, Doctor Strange also does not have a lot of overt connections to the
Marvel
universe.
It was good, and that's why I bought it, because
it has some.
The 3D would be cool, and the Marvel 3D stuff is very good. I'm a 3D guy. I like 3D, so I will watch that in 3D.
I will say about Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and a guy wrote an article on Esquire that I agreed with, stop with the baby Groot.
I get that.
Look, and the reason I hate Ellen is the exact same reason I hate baby Groot.
Yeah.
Mindless dancing. When will this fucking country, when will human beings stop being entertained by things dancing?
Well, Baby Groot was like kind of the end credits joke in the first movie. It was like 90 seconds of that.
Right.
And now it's like 2 hours of that?
Well, they were like, hey, we can sell a bunch of... This is the weird thing about this movie. It's not a kid's movie.
No.
It's a PG-13, and it also edges a little bit.
Yeah.
There's some scarier stuff or whatever. There's, you know, I would not be taking a 7-year-old to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
But they want to sell the 7-year-olds all the...
They sell Funko Pops.
They want to sell them all the Funko Pops and the plush Rocket Raccoons and the...
By the way, if you want me to lose respect for you, let me visit your dwelling and see Funko Pops lined up. That's when I will not like
you
anymore.
I have three.
Yeah, well...
And here's...
There's probably an over-under on those and too many
I have three.
Yes.
Actually, we have four.
Right.
One's Amy's. I have three, and they are, and they were given to me.
Yes.
I did not purchase them.
Okay, well, that makes it a little
better. I might purchase two more to complete the set.
Hey.
They are Randy Macho Man Savage, Andre the Giant, and Hulk Hogan.
Okay, well, that's...
And so I would perhaps buy the Roddy Piper, you know what I'm saying, to just around that set.
There's an Ultimate Warrior, too?
There's an Ultimate Warrior, or maybe the Ric Flair.
Okay.
But anyway.
I don't know.
That's about, you know...
Well, we got to talk pro wrestling, so I guess that's our segue.
So Guardians of the Galaxy is good. I enjoyed it. Yeah. I'm with you. It's not the best. I actually really like Doctor Strange.
Okay, that was what I need to see, and I should probably see Guardians. Maybe I'll see it at home. I don't know.
Fuck if I know. It's a big visual orgy, and it's fun.
Well, I think
it's a lot of fun. The humor works in the movie very well.
I mean,
it's kind of an extended cameo from Stallone. Nah, not so much. Really? He's not a spoiler. It's not a spoiler.
That's the one I knew about. But, you know, I think I'm going to go see Alien this week. So that would be the one, if I was going to go see a summer blockbuster, even though it's not summer, I would probably go see that over this.
I'm kind of ready to retire the Alien franchise.
Well, I like Prometheus, and I'm hearing good things.
See, I hated Prometheus.
See, some people hated Prometheus, but I thought it was good. And I've heard this is good, but I don't know. It's a little early.
Prometheus was the movie with the most money and effort put into a film about stupid people.
Yeah.
It was like we built this glorious, incredible visual world, and we built this spaceship full of incredible elite scientists and explorers who are seasoned veterans of the Space Corps or whatever the hell they're in. And then they go to a planet and they go, hey, what's this snake-looking thing? Let me poke it with a stick.
Yeah, well,
it's the dumbest.
You gotta suspend disbelief on some level.
I'll suspend it. Okay, Rocket Raccoon is a talking raccoon.
Yes.
That shoots laser guns.
Yes,
I'm willing to go with that.
Yeah,
because
the
character is consistent
and it doesn't take place in our universe or whatever or something. But
it's out in space. I don't take smart people doing stupid things and suspend my disbelief.
In the original Alien, it was in the guy's stomach. How the fuck were they to know? But
in the original Alien, they don't act. They've never encountered this thing before.
Yeah.
They have no fucking clue what's happening. Nobody acts
this the prequel thing? And everyone from Prometheus is dead except for the robot guy, Michael Fassbender.
So who knows?
Who knows? I'm sure they
isn't this. I don't even know the story.
Danny McBride's in it. I know that. I don't know a whole lot else.
Is this
Michael Fassbender and Danny McBride?
Right.
I don't know who else.
I'm not. I don't even know. But just based on the little clips I've seen, is this the?
I'm trying to not be spoiled.
Is this the colony ship that's heading to the planet that Aliens takes on place on? Is that what this is?
Prometheus took place on a different planet than Alien, but it is where the aliens came from.
Because the
lady in Prometheus gave birth to an alien at the end of that?
I know, yeah, I'm already confused.
It's a spoiler for a six-year-old movie. I'm sorry, but whatever.
The founders or whatever the creators that seeded the galaxy with life and created these xenomorphs. One of their guys landed on LV-271 or whatever the fucking thing is called in Alien.
Yeah.
And then that got also to the other planet that was the colony planet. Or did they colonize LV-271? Is that what it was?
It's a different planet, and I guess if you put these things on different planets, you can have different crews of explorers finding them, which I guess was the plot of Prometheus 2 and was the plot of the first Alien. I don't fucking know. Let's move on.
All right, now I got to look that up. Now I'm confused.
I don't fucking know. It's good. I like it.
It's about time to retire that one.
Pro wrestling. I went. We don't talk about pro wrestling. I think we've talked about how we like it and certainly both liked it as kids, but there is a renaissance in pro wrestling. There is pro wrestling that if you used to like pro wrestling and you think WWE is for idiots, and you'd be right, you can watch now. It's called indie wrestling, and there are major indie groups, and there are groups from Japan that are very enjoyable and very easy to watch now. If you wanted to watch Japanese pro wrestling in the 80s and 90s, you needed to find somebody in Japan that would send you a tape or trade a tape or buy a tape from someone in America who knew someone in Japan. And nowadays, it's all on streaming services. Like New Japan World, which is where New Japan Pro Wrestling has all their matches, and you can watch it live or on tape, whatever you want to do. And two of these groups got together. They get together every year. Ring of Honor, the Baltimore-based American indie promotion, which is where guys like Daniel Bryan and Seth Rollins and Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens in WWE all worked and were champions at one point. So Cesaro worked there, if you know him. They all worked there at one point and became stars and learned the craft. They get together with New Japan Pro Wrestling and do a tour called War of the Worlds. I went to it last year in Dearborn, Michigan, and it was such a good show that I decided I would go to two shows on that tour this year, Toronto on Sunday and then Dearborn, Michigan on Wednesday. That's where I was on the train. I took the train to Toronto, which, again, took 5 hours because of the fucking tracks getting washed out, which it's a little too long to be on a train, I found, five. It's kind of like a flight, like four get you coast to coast in America, and anything more than that is too much. This is how I felt about the train. Too long, 5 hours, but...
You're saying 13 hours is too long on a plane?
You did that to go to China, I guess. That. Well, yeah, you know... If you, I mean, I did Europe, and that's six to eight,
depending on where you're going,
if you know, I think the one time I went to England, I stopped in Montreal, and so that took longer, and that, but it was a little too long on the train, but I took the train because driving to Toronto has gotten to be ridiculously difficult in the last few years because of Toronto blowing up and the freeways not able to keep up, and you know the subway was convenient for the venue where wrestling was taking place, so. I said, let me go to this. And, of course, one of the other reasons I went to Toronto is that I knew that they'd have a good lineup. They had a different lineup than we had here because they had Kenny Omega, who, if you're not aware of Kenny Omega, he is the top foreign star in New Japan Pro Wrestling. He is Canadian. He's a Canadian citizen who lives in Japan and who, being a fan of wrestling and anime and video games, moved to Japan to follow all of those things and is fluent in Japanese. And he is an incredible wrestler. He was given one of the only 6-star ratings in the Wrestling Observer newsletter for his match January 4th this year with the Japanese champion Kazuchika Okada. And Kenny Omega is just so awesome. And WWE was going to pay him a lot of money to come in, and he decided to stay in Japan. And if you haven't seen Kenny Omega, you will love him. He's an awesome promo. He's an awesome wrestler. He kind of does I guess his gimmick would be described as Arnold Schwarzenegger in Terminator meets an anime character, but it's just really great, and he's so awesome, and because he's not an American citizen, he's had visa issues for the last few years, and so I knew he'd be able to work Toronto, so I bought a ticket for that.
Right.
And since I was going alone, I was able to get a front row ticket, and so if you see the tape of this Toronto show, War of the Worlds Toronto, which you can get at ROHWrestling.com, you will see me for the whole show because I'm hard camera front row and got to meet all the guys before the show. They had a meet and greet. And so Here's, and then Corey went with me on Wednesday. Yes. We'll talk about that in a second. So here's a funny story from Toronto. So a couple of the guys that were there, they don't bring over everyone from Japan, but they brought 8 guys this year. A little different than the guys last year, but one of the guys that always comes is this guy, Ghetto. Ghetto is the booker of New Japan Pro Wrestling, meaning he's kind of the brains.
And it's G-E-D-D-O.
G-E-D-O is Ghetto.
G-E-D-O.
G-E-D-O.
Not
Ghetto.
Ghetto.
No, Ghetto. Yeah. I don't even know what Ghetto means in Japanese, G-E-D-O. But Ghetto was there. He's the brains. He's the booker. He was a junior heavyweight for a lot of years, going back to the 90s. So Ghetto's in his 40s, I think, at this point. And he's kind of the guy that loses a lot of his matches, but, you know, he's the booker. He's there to kind of put over the younger guys anyway. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I like about Ghetto, in addition to being the brains behind the operation, and I respect that, a lot of maybe wrestlers don't, wrestling fans don't know that Ghetto books. And New Japan is a very well-booked company. It doesn't insult your intelligence. You know, it doesn't. Here's the why.
To the extent that wrestling doesn't insult your intelligence.
But I mean, it's like they don't do a lot of DQ finishes. The referees don't get knocked out they do sometimes, but they don't get knocked out at the regularity. I mean, yeah, guys do blow green mist in New Japan and stuff, and you have to sort of suspend disbelief there. Yeah. But it's not like guys are hitting each other with brass knuckles every minute, and, you know, guys aren't getting thrown into cakes and shit like that in New Japan. It's way smarter than that. It's more athletic.
There's no,
it's more of a sport.
No Katie Vicks.
No, there's none of that. There's no supernatural gimmicks. I mean,
no mummies.
There's a guy with a giant sickle, evil, who comes out, who we saw. But but anyway, I like Ghetto. One of the things also I like about Ghetto is that when he wrestles, he does a lot of like psychological stuff. He yells at his opponents. He swears at them in English, which is my favorite thing, where he takes guys and like he was beating up this guy, David Finley, last year in a match. And he was like slamming his head into like the timekeeper's table and going, "You like this table, motherfucker? You take this table, fucker." And he was like slamming his head into it, and it was just hilarious. And I love that. And I like his style of wrestling. He's got a good character. So I met Ghetto. I paid $20, went up to Ghetto, and said, "Hey, you know," and again, some of these guys, you know, Ghetto, apparently, I was told Ghetto speaks good English. That's what I heard before I met him. Ghetto speaks good English, and I go, "Well, he swears in English good." So I meet Ghetto, and I walk up to him, and I say, "Ghetto, pleasure to meet you." And I get that. I see that face. You know how it is when someone doesn't speak good English? You get that look on their face like, "Hey, Ghetto," you know? So I'm already getting the fact that he doesn't speak good English. Like, just initially saying hello. And I go, "Okay, I'm just going to tell him." I said, "Ghetto, I'm giving you..." So you get a little ticket when you pay for this. And I hand it to him. And that's like they cash that in for money later from the promotion. And I say, "I'm handing you this because I want you... I like when you swear in English. So I'm only giving you this if you promise to swear at me." And he's like, "Swear? What do you mean swear?" I say, "I like it when you beat guys up and say, fuck you, or call him a motherfucker." So he grabs the stack of 8x10s, and he's like, he's kind of like, "Let me just get this guy out of my line." He's a maniac, right? He's thinking that about me. And he goes, "You want me to call you mother?" So he starts writing on the thing, and I go, and he writes, so he writes, "To motherfucker." And hands it to me, and I go, "Oh my God, I love this. Thank you so much." And I put my arm around him.
Are you going to frame that? And
well,
hang
I'm,
that
go-
in
I-
the
I'm going to. Let me get it. It gets better. So Ghetto signs that, and I go, "Oh, this is great." You know, because they want to like know your name and then sign it and whatever. And just kind of get you. Ghetto's like, "Let me get out of this line." I'm sitting here. And like, Ghetto's not the most popular guy because he's a guy who loses. Like I said, he loses a lot. He's older. A lot of, you know, like, the line for Kenny Omega is 2 hours long. But Ghetto, you can meet in 2 seconds, right? So Ghetto signs my thing. I take a picture with them. I meet Hiroyuki Goto, who's a great guy. But again, not all that friendly. You know, just he's kind of a guy that's there. But I like Goto because he beats people up good. So I'm in line for Kenny Omega. Because I'm not going to meet Kenny. He's not on the rest of this tour. He's a fucking superstar. I love him. Great. You know, really good promos. And I meet Kenny. I wait in line for like 2 hours almost. The matches have already started. I get in line. Kenny's up there. I say, "Kenny," and I set down my 8x10s. You know, I set down the other guys, Goto and Ghetto. I set it down, and I say, "Kenny, I'm a big fan. Nice to meet you." I'm shaking his hand, and he looks down, and he goes, "To motherfucker, that's hilarious." And he turns to the Young Bucks, who are the other kind of big, hot guys, the American guys who kind of do a Shawn Michaels gimmick.
That's another drop.
Yeah.
The big hot guys.
I love Dick. So they're the other big hot act on the indies now is Young Bucks. So if you see Young Bucks, very entertaining guys. So he turns to Young Bucks and goes, "Hey, check this out." And Ghetto wrote "To motherfucker." And they're laughing. And I've made now Kenny and Young Bucks laugh.
now they like me, because I think that's probably a joke to them too, is ghetto swearing. And I go, I love it when he swears. And then Kenny's like, all right, take a pic, you know. So I got to get a picture of Kenny. I want to get back. The matches have already started. I got this front row seat. So Kenny takes the picture. I tell him, hey, I'm going to Long Beach, which is, I'm going there in July to see New Japan there, and he's going to be on that show. So I said, Kenny, can you sign the 8x10 before I leave? And he said, sure, man. And he grabs the 8x10, he signs the 8x10 for me, hands it to me. And in my haste, I just take the 8x10, and I go to my seat, I put it under my chair, I sit in the front row, I watch the matches, never even, you know, look, Kenny signed the 8x10, you know, didn't even, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I told him my name is Joel, so whatever. And I watched the matches, front row. Kenny and the Bucks had this awesome main event against Hiroshi Tanahashi, the big star from New Japan, and Chris Daniels and Frankie Kazarian, and Chris Daniels champs. It's an amazing main event. And I'm walking to the subway, and I go, oh, let me see if anyone spilled beer on my 8x10s while it was under my chair the whole time. I didn't even look, and I'm walking to the subway, and I wrote that. I see that Kenny signed it to motherfucker. Kenny Omega. So I didn't even get the joke till it was over. So Kenny, you made me laugh.
There you go.
Hours after you did it. So that was really cool. I enjoyed Kenny. A great match. Cool guy. And now I have 2 8x10 signed to motherfucker.
Well, those are.
Yeah, that's.
I should.
Cool.
You should frame all of those.
I should. I got 6 of them because in Dearborn.
And assure that no woman.
Yeah. No
will
pussy.
Ever.
No pussy will ever die. I gotta have it where I can like cover it up with.
This is where
like a Beatles album or
well,
something.
This is
I don't
you
know.
You need an office,
yes,
that is separate from your home.
From my home, yeah.
We need a studio that is not. We need
well,
a
listen.
We need like a remote studio. That's when you can hang
women,
the embarrassing
women.
Now, granted,
here.
I have in my living room a yeah. John Saxon yeah. autograph.
Yeah.
From Enter the Dragon. So right. I mean, who am I to talk?
But women come in here and there's 35 PlayStation 4 games on a fucking thing. And
well,
there's,
yeah.
There's 6 different controllers.
Hasn't
and
stopped them.
No, I still get a few. And then Dearborn, we went to. I had another good seat there. Brought it for Corey. I said, Corey, come watch yeah. wrestling with me. And we had a good time. You got to see all those guys, Tanahashi. You saw, well, not Kenny, but you saw the Bucks, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Kushida, who I met was a mm-hmm. fun guy to meet, and. Tetsuya Naito, the head of Los Ingobernables de Japón. Ingobernables de Japón. There he
tough.
Is. I don't know. But it's
there's
a
weird
game.
Thing where there's a
Spanish.
Mexican. They're like the
yeah.
Japanese faction of a Mexican
yeah.
wrestling gang.
He developed that character while he was working in Mexico.
I believe that's the ungovernables.
Yes, the uncontrollables yes. or something. Yeah, is what that means. But he was there, and I took a picture with Naito and those guys, and Tanahashi, and very good stuff. And Corey was there, took photos, and you ran into a bunch of your friends there, Monday
yeah,
and Joe and Christine
there, yeah, yeah.
and everybody. So we had a good time. It was really fun going to New Japan.
I had
ROH.
Not. I mean, my wrestling fandom, obviously, the peaks of my wrestling fandom were probably 1987
yeah.
and 1997.
Yes.
And I think I skipped 2007.
And yeah.
So I hadn't been to a wrestling show in years.
And those guys are almost all retired, with
I
a
had,
few exceptions. So.
Well, Goldberg still
yeah,
out there.
He dragged
Chris
him
Jericho.
Back. Yeah.
I went to many, I did go to many Nitros and Raws
yeah.
back in the day. And
see, even though I liked that era, I never went live. It's funny, I just never went live.
I saw a bunch of those.
Recent, yeah.
ECW yeah. went to a couple of those.
Okay.
So it is, I will say this for professional wrestling. No matter what you think of it, if you love professional wrestling like many a young comic seems to do.
Yes, it's very hot among
comedians.
It's very
popular among comedians now, which
yeah.
is interesting because it wasn't.
Yeah.
Like when I started doing comedy, which, yeah. like I said, I skipped the 2007 portion, but like, in, you know, I was still liking wrestling mm-hmm. back then in 2000, probably. I was still watching it. There was no comic would talk about
yeah.
wrestling or
right.
It was like Matt McClary and I were like, we like you like comic book.
Yeah.
Like comic book. It was kind of just not a thing.
You get the occasional black guy who liked The Rock or something.
Yes.
It was you know, you'd get those guys, but not a lot.
I worked with in the late 80s, early 90s when I worked at the warehouse with the food truck.
Yeah.
The guy that I rode with most days,
uh-huh.
like we would do the we'd go deliver stuff. He was convinced he never kayfabe was never broken.
He
for him.
Didn't know it was fake.
It's real to me, damn it.
Yeah.
He thought Gold Dust was a real
oh.
actual mincing sissy and was gonna get the gay on him.
Yeah.
And really, you know what I mean? He yeah. really loved wrestling, like without any
mm-hmm.
ironic distance from it or any you know, Davey loved wrestling like it was real.
He can't kill The Undertaker, man. He's real.
He's a damn zombie. And he really thought the shit was real.
Yeah.
I personally find I like the goofier the gimmick.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them are real stupid, like the Yeti or whatever.
Well,
but
you like some of the guys on this show. And whenever because I know that about you, and I go, oh, here comes War Machine. You're like these guys. They're big Viking assholes. And you kind of like them, and they spit on us. That was fun.
I honestly, my favorite guy.
Yeah, I know who you liked.
Silas Young.
Okay, Silas Young is like a big white trash toothless guy. Yeah.
But he's working a
giant mustache.
He's working a traditional heel angle.
Yeah.
And then I watched.
You liked Beer City Bruiser, who was a big fat guy with a keg of beer on his shoulder and a cigar.
To some extent, yeah. Yeah. I like the Japanese guys.
Yes.
In general, just mm-hmm. because they're, you know. The Japanese guys used to in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
New Japan was very into like everybody wearing black trunks.
Yeah,
and they were real hardcore and serious about their business.
They have personality now. The Japanese
they'd have
guys.
Long matches where they would just grapple.
Yeah.
And do holds for 20 minutes at a time. Then there was Michinoku Pro,
right,
which brought a more lucha style, mm-hmm. high flying. I'm very versed in wrestling. I just have lapsed. Yeah. My interest in it because it has not been.
But all those things.
I also got married, and I will tell you this: of all the Geeky Kingdom, you know, of all the Mystery Science Theater and the comic books, and all the geeky stuff, and even the video games, the wife will not tolerate the wrestling.
Well, here's the thing about wrestling:
I will not.
No,
I cannot have wrestling in my home.
Okay, the thing about wrestling now that I found, even from going to these shows, and I had been to the ROH show last year. But what I found, and Detroit had a little less of this than the Toronto show, and I think I explained this before we went, was that the current wrestling fan, you know, they know it's fake, and the equivalent for me is this is guys in their 30s and their 40s, and an independent wrestling show, like an ROH show nowadays, and I'm going to Evolve this next, you know, it's coming up this Sunday, Evolve in Detroit, their debut, which is another indie group, which is a lot of good guys. It's almost like an indie rock show where, you know, if you go to the Bon Jovi concert, mm-hmm. and it's like, you know, an expensive ticket, and it's all kinds of women with giant hairspray hair and a bunch of dumb guys who are drunk on beer, and then you go to the indie rock show at the Majestic, and it's really cool guys stroking their beards. That's kind of what indie wrestling is now. It's like a lot of like smarter guys. I mean, Detroit did have its rednecks there, and we had a guy behind us who, believe me, gave all wrestling fans a bad name, who was yelling in our ear all night, who had something wrong with him.
Yeah, but he was an unfucked. is that the appropriate term?
Autistic
for
guy.
He was like a borderline. Yeah, I mean
spectrum type guy. Yeah.
That guy has seen 1,000 super kicks.
Yeah.
And not one vagina in the raw.
But I'm telling
in
you,
the wild.
A lot of the guys now are like the guy Tim, who I did that podcast with last week, who's in a punk band and stuff. He was there, and he's got big, thick black frame glasses and slick back hair. There's a lot of guys who are cool, who have really good taste, who like this modern era of wrestling, and who don't watch WWE and TNA and the stuff that's on cable because it's better. It's a better quality. It is the food truck of wrestling. It is this cool, smaller,
it's hipstery
thing.
Wrestling.
Yes.
Yeah. And everybody there is understands how the thing operates.
Yeah, they all know it's phony. It's not fooling anyone.
And I think on a certain level, everybody knew it was phony for a long time.
Yeah, but yeah.
I mean, okay, if you look at like, if you watch like Mid-South cards from the mid-80s, those people didn't think it was phony.
No.
They thought it was real.
Yes.
And
well, they were stabbing the heels and stuff in the 70s and the 80s.
Well,
you
sure.
Know.
I mean,
you know, a smoke-filled arena full of drunk guys and, you know. Madison Square Garden, all the Puerto Ricans rooting for Pedro Morales.
Right.
And when Blackjack Mulligan laid him out, it's going to be hell to get back to that dressing room, Blackjack.
But personally, as an old school wrestling fan, I appreciated the guys on this show.
Yeah.
The quality of the wrestling was good. All I mean, in terms
top
of
top to bottom, yeah.
Of
the work.
You know, all the guys can do some amount of. Maybe not Beer City Brawler, but
Beer City Bruiser.
All of the guys can kind of work.
Yeah, they athletic can, moves, high flying,
as they call
all
it,
that stuff.
As they call it, spots.
Yeah.
I worry about this episode. Now, for some reason, Joel and I have been talking into microphones for a decade.
Yeah.
And we've talked about all manner of embarrassing stuff about our own personal sexual proclivities and all the way, but I feel uncomfortable talking about wrestling.
Yeah, I know. We'll
like,
wrap it up here
to
shortly.
To like civilians.
Because I'll,
I feel like there's like
that's
regular
why we
people.
Did it at the end. That's
okay.
All.
So, anyway, because I could go into the details. But
there's a guy that you liked more than anybody, and you don't even know this, but you got some pub out of that. You don't even know that.
Oh, do I?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I'm putting myself under to put you over, I guess, on some level, to use wrestling terminology. Uh-huh. I'm burying myself because I did send a note to Dave Meltzer, the editor of the Wrestling Observer newsletter that I subscribe to, which I know you're
going. Oh, really?
Yes. He is the old, grizzled, like, Burt Sugar boxing reporter that covers pro wrestling, but also writes, 30,000 words a week on it that you can subscribe to if you want to pay, and covers pro wrestling. Yeah, there's a stack of them over there. But he covers pro wrestling like it's Variety covering the movie business, right. He's the insider.
The insider.
Gossip, dirt sheet guy. Yeah, but also is now respect. And again, it's the new wrestling fans that respect Dave.
Well, because wrestling journalism in the past was either a propaganda from the league itself, WWF, or there was what they called the Apter mags.
Yes.
Which were
telling the storyline.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated
things,
and keeping the whole thing. Right.
So anyway, Dave wanted reports on these shows because they weren't on television, and he put it on his Twitter. So I wrote one for Toronto that he used bits and pieces. He's like, well, Kenny Omega's autograph line was 2 hours. I gave him that, and I gave him some general stuff like, Kushida and Jay Lethal had a great match and stuff, and he used some of that. So I wrote the same thing from Dearborn. Well, apparently no one else gave him a report. So he ran.
No one else gave him a
report? Yeah, I think I was the only one that sent a report from Dearborn. I just wrote it up, after I got home. And I gave him who won it. And I told him, this guy was over and people popped for this. And this guy, the New Japan guys were a little more over. And I said that I took a guy who no longer watches current pro wrestling, that is a lapsed fan. And he was most impressed by the guy who worked his ass off in the main event, Will Ospreay, who was like one of the all-time great high flyers. Yeah. He's like 24 years old. He's a British guy. And he flies around like a maniac, and he did all kinds of crazy shit in the main event. And Corey was like, fucking Will Ospreay was great. And that's what you were talking about on the ride home. And I wrote that. Sure. I said, I didn't put your name down, but I said, I took a guy who doesn't watch pro wrestling now, and he loved Will Ospreay, who worked his ass off. And that was, and so I got the byline on the front page of Wrestling Observer, and that was in there too. And I didn't, believe me, if I knew it was going to be written in the Observer, because I did put in a line about how Kelly Klein had a nice ass. And they actually edited that out. So I guess some of it made it in and some of it didn't. But I didn't know it was going to be published, I would have written it differently.
At the start of this thing, they had a woman's match.
Yeah.
And
it was like a dark match. Nobody gave a fuck.
It lasted about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And they had the one girl who I guess works for. I don't even know if I've ever seen women in or
Like
WWE has
they have
the Divas division
women,
and a bunch of women. Anyway, they brought
Ring of Honor almost doesn't. Well, New Japan doesn't do it at all.
The one girl looked like a female wrestler, and the other one looked like she weighed 90 pounds and was like a punk rock chick.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, did they just go get this girl out of like roller derby or some like local?
She looked like a fan who went to wrestling school.
Yeah.
Like some girl who really liked wrestling.
Anyway, and, but that match was over real quick.
Yeah, but Kelly Klein was hot, so we.
But I will say, having not watched this stuff, and we were super close, we were right in the front.
Yeah, yeah.
The one thing that killed it was the photographer.
Oh my god,
that ruined the show.
Oh, there's a
so they've got these ring photographers, okay?
Yeah.
and now in Japan they would always do the shtick where there was a bunch of these guys.
Well,
I think it kind of makes it look like it's a legitimate
event.
But
in Japan
somewhat.
It's in Japan pro wrestling is covered in the sports pages. There's Tokyo Sports, which is the big sports newspaper, and it's on the front cover when they run a major match, so they cover it like it's a sport, so you do get guys that cover it. And in Toronto, they had photographers who I guess were probably from the Alt Weekly or maybe even the Toronto Star or whatever the big newspaper is. And I don't know who the guys were in Detroit covering. I don't know where they were from. But one guy was about 6'6 and 300 pounds. And it's funny, I was watching some Japanese wrestling today and I was seeing 20 photographers around the ring and they're all hunched. I mean, first of all, they're short guys anyway because they're in Japan, but they're hunched down. They're trying to not be in the way of the action.
I'm guessing
they're leaning on the ring apron.
Now, in the episode of the TV show I watched, there was like one photographer.
Yeah.
And that was like a house show in Baltimore.
But
I think there were what, four photographers at all times? probably.
Where? At Detroit?
At the show we went to, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There were probably three.
All right.
And there was three in Toronto.
And there were, then there's an addition to the cameramen.
Yeah. Well,
now, the like, cameramen that were shooting the TV show
exactly.
never got in my way
exactly.
once.
That's the point.
Never once got in my way.
Exactly.
The photographers, they get this 6'5 beef mountain.
And the other guy was a big fat guy, too, but he was short, at least.
He wasn't as obtrusive.
Yeah.
But this big hump of shit. Now, maybe they had more photographers because they had New Japan.
It might have been a bigger ticket.
Now,
yes.
Were those all guys hired by Ring of Honor?
I can't tell if Ring of Honor...
Were they stringers that were going to sell the
pictures?
I don't
know if they just... If you just email PR and they let you photograph it and give you an ROH staff shirt? I don't know. Because first of all, then put me in the goddamn ringside because I got a nice camera that I lugged out to both of those events and took some real good photos, by the way. But... You know, it was like that guy was in my way.
Joel's new career.
I was looking through my photos, and it's all this guy. Here's a this guy. If you, to imagine this, Corey and I are in the second row at this Dearborn
show.
We're
like on the aisle.
Okay,
so the wrestlers where the wrestlers come in.
And I got good photos of the mannering, but when the action's going on, I can barely see his.
In fact, one of the guys spit on us.
Yes,
he did one of those triumphal spits into the air,
water bottle spit,
like, and we got hit with spit. And we high five several
of the guys. This fat guy was above, his head was above the second rope while he was standing on the floor with his camera. That's how tall this dickhead was.
And how tall is the ring? 10 feet?
Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, the second rope is, the second rope is 7 foot above the fucking thing. It was ridiculous. Yeah. The guy was in our way. Didn't know. Like, photographers should really stand by, like, the ring post. Because you already, if you have a seat behind the ring post, you already can't see. So
now, granted,
you'd be out of the way.
He was only blocking us.
He was blocking
like
a dozen guys.
He was blocking 12 people.
But we paid, I paid $90 for those fucking tickets,
Jesus
I
Christ.
Think, or something like that. Yeah. 80 bucks. I don't know what it was. It's a fucking lot of money. Fuck that guy. And fuck Ring of Honor for having him there. God damn it.
It was really annoying.
It was super annoying. Maybe I just won't sit at the aisle next time, but I wanted to shake everybody's hand and, you know,
well,
it was cool.
The best place to sit is the side where the hard cameras
the hard
aren't.
Camera is, yeah.
No, where they aren't. Oh, well, the guys will come at you. But
because they work the hard camera
there were
side,
never photographers on the other side.
Yeah, but even...
You know what I mean? You had an unobstructed
view. But even if they were the TV guys, the guys doing the actual...
We're out of the way.
Because they know to get the fuck out of the way. They know they're in
the
way. And I know that was when I worked for Juggalo Championship Wrestling, because they tell you when I'd be the ring announcer... They would go work the hard camera. So you always delivered your intros to the hard camera side, and the cameramen knew where to stand, and the wrestlers knew when they came in to play the hard camera. They teach you that, and this fucking fat piece of garbage.
You know, if this guy had dropped back 6 feet and stood in the aisle.
Kneel the fuck down.
Or if he
kneel the fuck down.
If he dropped back 6 feet and stood in the aisle, he would not have been in the way.
Because some guys, you see them, they wear a knee pad. Because they know they're going to be kneeling all night, and this fucking guy wouldn't do it.
He was kind of just sitting there like a lump. On the side of the road. He was like a big cancerous tumor laying on the ring. But then every now and then, some guys would come flying towards him and he'd have to clear off.
Yeah, it was annoying. Oh. All right. Well,
anyway, I would say go see a wrestling event if you don't even like wrestling.
Go see indie wrestling. It's great. It's
not like when I used to go in the 80s and 90s when it was scary, degenerate, truck farmers that looked like they were about ready to kill. That homo Coco Beware, we'll get him.
And we
saw...
There
was not that. These guys were more...
And I saw...
It's still goofy.
Okay, I don't want to say the number was one, but where we were sitting in our meeting area, there was one child who was dressed up as Marty Skrull, which was kind of cool. Yes.
The kid was about 10
was
or
10
11.
Or, in Toronto, there was a kid on the aisle across from me who was like 7 or 8. But it's not a lot of kids going to these shows. It's really for grown-ups. You know, WWE's full of kids.
But I mean, that kid was 12 or whatever, so he
could
sit through the show.
And
he
looked bored at times anyway. But,
oh, believe me, we took our niece had a dance recital.
Yeah.
And her brother barely made it through the whole, like, he's kicking and screaming the whole
time. So it's not a lot of kids going to these shows either. It's for guys in their 30s and 40s that grew up on wrestling,
right,
that hate it. And watch these matches now. There's a match, I know it's free if you look it up, Google it or whatever. From last year, I tried to get you to watch this before you went out, but Will Ospreay versus Ricochet from New Japan last year, Corkin Hall. I believe it's now free.
Mm-hmm.
It's go to newjapanworld.com. It's free on their site, and if you go to, it's probably on YouTube too. Will Ospreay wrestles Ricochet, who's the other great high flying wrestler who generally works under a mask in Lucha Underground as Prince Puma.
if you get Lucha Underground on El Rey. But he also works New Japan. They had an amazing high-flying match, just crazy, stupid, insane moves. That is free. If you don't like current pro wrestling or you're a Laps fan and you want to see guys fly around like nobody else you've ever seen, Ricochet versus Will Ospreay, there's a lot of good free matches on New Japan World. Kenny Omega's got lots of matches that you can find on Daily Motion, on YouTube. Watch those. They're real good. You'll like them. Watch Okada. Watch, if you've seen Nakamura in WWE or NXT, he was from New Japan. AJ Styles did a bunch of New Japan stuff. So there's a lot of good stuff out there.
This could be the most alienating segment.
I know. That's why we're saying goodnight. Thanks to everyone for listening. I had a good time.
I had a lot of fun going to the show.
I thought you would. And I thought you'd have more fun.
I'm probably not going to be more committed to wrestling than I ever was before, but it was fun to see it live.
But you would enjoy watching. Your wife be damned. You would enjoy if you got New Japan World and watched two shows a month on there. You'd get your $10 worth.
You know what the problem with Ring of Honor on TV is?
Yeah.
They don't mic the crowd.
Yeah. The crowd is hot.
It doesn't sound...
Lots of chance.
But you know what I mean? You don't really mic the crowd to hear how the noise.
Yeah.
So the crowd seems dead.
Yeah, the TV tapings are not as good as their Ring of Honor pay-per-views of the house shows I found. Because for some whatever reason...
They should really tape the shows on the road.
Well, they do, but they're available. They don't have a streaming service, so you've got to buy them piecemeal. And they're like I said, they're $15. The pay-per-views are $30, those are all good shows. Again, if you get the Toronto one, I'm sure we're going to be on the Dearborn one whenever that one goes up. But you can see me ringside in Toronto, giving the two sweet to the Bucks and Kenny and all those guys. So it was good times. All right, let's wrap this up. Let's wrap up our no pussy getting selves, or maybe just me.
I'm beyond those concerns now.
You're married. You are a no pussy getting
now. If I start talking about wrestling, I might have to go to an attorney.
Well, maybe you can watch New Japan when the wife goes to work or something. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I can't watch it with her. That's like the line in the sand where she's just like, nope, not having it.
Would she like it being not?
Not
stupid.
At all. No. We can watch I Love Dick together.
Yeah,
but
that's a good show. That's a good show.
She's
feminist. Feminist nudity is the best kind of nudity.
Okay, whatever it takes.
I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah,
I love it.
That's a show. It's an empowering feminist tale.
Feminist Bush, baby.
About a woman that desperately wants to get boned by Kevin Bacon.
These women are natural and hairy. It's worth a look.
There was a Merkin used in at least one.
Maybe not. Good night, America, and all her ships at sea. Catch me on 9:10 a.m. every Tuesday night, 11 to 1 with Mike Bonner in Detroit, or streaming on 910radiowhatever.com. Good night. See you at the matches. See you in Long Beach. July. I'll be there. I'll have to talk about that. Another show you should not.
I'll skip that one.
See you.